capital to get him brought here.
Conservative Robert Jenrick, why have we welcomed a man who's talked about killing Jewish people and describes himself as a racist white hater and...
Dogs. Yes, I think I prefer love.
But you have some dogs.
Oh, yes, and I love dogs.
The animal-loving French sex symbol Brigitte Bardot has died at the age of 91. Those stories and more after the news at 7 o'clock here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky claim they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine. The US president hosted the Ukrainian leader in Florida for talks after a phone call with Vladimir Putin. President Trump added a peace plan could be agreed within a few weeks if negotiations go well.
We could be very close. There are one or two very thorny issues, very tough issues. We've made a lot of progress today, but really we've made it over the last month. This is not a one-day process deal. This is very complicated stuff, but I think it's moving in the right direction.
They've agreed to have further discussions with European leaders in Washington next month. Israel's prime minister will also meet with the US president in Florida later to discuss a peace plan for Gaza. A man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police after a car crash in Thetford. Armed officers from Norfolk Police tracked down and shot a suspect, thought to be one of the drivers, yesterday evening. Detectives say they're not looking for anyone else. The Conservatives are calling for a British-Egyptian activist to be deported after social media posts emerged where he called for Zionists to be killed. Alaa Abd El-Fattah came back to the UK on Boxing Day after being freed from prison in Egypt. There are also calls for his citizenship to be revoked. The Crown Prosecution Service is calling for more to be done to help victims of coercive control. More than 52,000 cases were reported in England and Wales in the past year, but charges and prosecutions remain low. Kate Brown is domestic abuse lead at the CPS. She says many victims are unaware they're being abused.
Very often, these cases come to us when there has been a violent offence. The offender has been arrested for that violent offence. And then, with careful questioning, the police have discovered that there's a whole history of manipulation, isolation.
And Nick Kyrgios defeated Aryna Sabalenka in the latest Battle of the Sexes exhibition match. Sabalenka is the current women's world number one and has four Grand Slam titles. Kyrgios has been out of action for two seasons with a wrist injury. LBC weather, feeling chilly across the UK this morning and staying dry for most. Sunshine in Scotland and the north of England and a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
It's the season for savings with Virgin Media. Get great deals across our smooth, lightning-fast broadband range. Plus, switching is easy. We'll handle everything for you. That's smooth broadband and smooth switching. Smooth. Like a walrus on a speedboat powering through open-fjord waters. Yeah, that's smooth. Visit virginmedia.com. New customers only. Virgin Fibre areas. Restrictions and credit checks apply. Ends 4th of February. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning. 3 minutes past seven is the time you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Coming up...
I, like a lot of people, and I should imagine yourself included, deeply concerned.
Deeply concerned about the fate of the writer, Alaa Abd El-Fattah.
The brilliant, courageous and inspiring writer.
Yes, the one who also has called for Jews to be killed. That was Bill Nighy, Harriet Walter and Brian Cox, some of the celebrity names who are campaigning for Alaa Abd El-Fattah to be released. Does no one do any background checks? Chris Philp, the Shadow Home Secretary, will join us later on in the programme. Also... The sound of a barber's, a noise which many Labour MPs may well struggle to find as hairdressers and barbers now ban Labour MPs, so they can't go to the pub and they can't go to the hairdressers. We'll speak with one of those barbers and...
It's Nick
Kyrgios that secures victory in the battle of the sexes here in Dubai.
What was the point of this tennis match, the battle of the sexes?
0345-6060-973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning, it's lovely to have your company. 4 minutes past seven is the time you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. With you till 10 o'clock, coming up in the next hour, we will talk about Alaa Abd El Fattah, the man who has been given, well, he was given British citizenship under the Conservatives, by the way, but he's been welcomed home by the Prime Minister. Why on earth have we done that? We'll talk about that after eight. This hour, though, I want to talk about the historic meeting that took place in Florida. Where else? At Mar-a-Lago, President Trump saying there were the makings of a deal to end the war in Ukraine. But curiously, he had a call with President Putin before he spoke with Zelensky. Do you ever get the feeling that Donald Trump is actually being played, maybe, by the Russian president? Anyway, after the meeting, the US president spoke.
That one's very serious. I think, I can say that I believe Ukraine has made some very strong attacks also. And I don't say that negatively. I think you probably have to. I don't say that negatively. But I think, now he hasn't told me that, but there have been some explosions in various parts of Russia. And it looks to me like, I don't know, I don't think it came from the Congo. I don't think it came from the United States of America. It possibly came from Ukraine, but I haven't asked that question. Maybe I won't bother asking. No, they're fighting a war. And we'll see what happens. But I believe it's a war that we have two willing parties. We have two willing countries. They want to see it end.
It got slightly more hopeful when he said, I do believe we have the makings of a deal that's good for Ukraine, good for everybody. He described it, Donald Trump, as a terrific meeting and said that there were one or two thorny issues that remained relating to territory. While President Zelensky said the US-Ukraine security guarantees were 100% agreed, although Donald Trump said it was closer to 95%. I mean, it's all very smoke and mirrors, these meetings, aren't there? I mean, obviously, because it's such an important situation, 4 years nearly, that we've seen fighting in Ukraine. But I don't really understand what the point was, particularly if President Trump is having a call with Vladimir Putin, effectively getting his marching orders before from the Russian president. Now, you may well think, well, of course he's got to talk to him, because if Russia are going to agree to anything, then there has to be some form of agreement or plan in place. But President Trump at one point said that President Putin wants what's best for Ukraine. I mean, give me a break. Keen for your views this hour on what you made of the, I mean, appreciate you weren't in the room, but what you have made of some of this reporting that the makings of a deal are close. We've heard that so many times before. President Trump promised to end this war on day one, as you'll recall, during the election campaign. Are you losing hope the longer it goes on that this war, this invasion by Russia will actually be ended at all? Because if this is to be stopped, if it is to be ended, then you need the United States fully behind Ukraine, and well, that certainly hasn't been the case so far. 0345 60 60 973 is the number to call. We'll come to your views in a moment. First, they bring into the conversation Elena Halshuka, who is co-founder of the International Center for Ukrainian Victory, and joins me now. Thank you very much for your time, Elena. Can I ask you your thoughts on what you heard in the aftermath of that meeting?
Good morning. Honestly, I think that you described very well the analysis of the meeting, because I haven't heard anything clear. I mean, 90%, 100%, without one thing that is really missing still very much, there will be no effective peace process. And that's pressure on Russia, because if the talks aren't resolving the underlying problem. And in this war, the underlying problem is Russia's desire to restore their empire. Then there won't be peace. And we do not see any wish of the President Trump to put even minimal pressure on Russia. So over a year, we've been hearing, you know, the blame put on Zelensky, Ukraine, Europe, whoever else, anyone except Putin and Russia. That's why I don't think that there is any sort of progress at all at this point, because I'm not seeing the tangible steps in order to resolve the problem.
What is to be done of the future of the Donbass region? We know that Luhansk is 99% controlled by Moscow. Donetsk is, I think, around 70 to 75%. That is clearly a sticking point. How is it to be resolved in your view?
We have to understand that the war in that region, Russia wages since 2014. So this is not 4 years of war. That's more than 11 years of war. And those regions are the best fortified from the military perspective. and they are industrial regions. So they have very huge industrial complexes, which are themselves good fortresses for the defenders to hold the line. And if we all agree, and I think that nobody basically has the illusion that Russia wishes to stop this war forever, we just realize that they might agree for an operational pause to restart this war afterwards. So what is being offered right now is to hand Russia for free, without the fight, the best fortified region for them to rearm and restart this war and push forward in the plain terrain, in the steppes of the Dnipropetrovsk and Kharkiv regions, that would be way harder to defend from the military perspective. I'm not even speaking about the constitution, you know, which clearly prohibits the, any attacks on the Ukrainian territorial sovereignty.
Lastly, can I ask you about talks that will continue? It's understood that there may well be trilateral talks between the US, Russia and Ukraine. That's what President Trump said. That could happen at the right time. Is that a remote possibility?
Well, he promised the summit trilateral between Zelensky, Putin and Trump, I think, after Alaska summit or something like that. Months are passing and Russians are not engaging in any meaningful conversations. That's why I don't see this to be realistic perspective.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciated. That was Elena Halshuka, who is co-founder at the International Center for Ukrainian Victory. Let's turn to Lee Turner, who was the former British ambassador to Ukraine and is author of the book Lessons in Diplomacy, Politics, Power and Parties. And Mr. Turner joins me on the line now. Are you similarly as pessimistic when it comes to the future of these talks? Good morning.
Morning. Yes. Well, I thought Elena Halshuka summed it up very well there. There's a kind of tiny fringe of good news coming out of yesterday's meeting between the two sides, between Trump and Zelensky. The vibes were not bad. You remember the meeting that took place in Washington last February.
Yeah, how could you forget?
When Vice President J.D. Vance and Trump ganged up on Zelensky, shouting at him. This was pretty terrible. This time, at least, both sides said it went well. There was lots of smiles, shaking of hands. That's good. But as Elena said, there's zero sign of any breakthrough here. There are a couple of issues which are absolutely fundamental to making progress, Henry. One is security guarantees. How do you make sure that if there is a peace deal, that Russia doesn't just tear it up in 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 months, as it did after the peace deal that was reached after Russia's first invasion, that again Elena mentioned, that took place in 2014. After that invasion, there was a peace deal. What did Russia do? It launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. We honestly can't trust a word that Vladimir Putin says. Trump has said extraordinarily that that Russia wants to work with Ukraine, wants to help Ukraine, wants the best for Ukraine. I don't want to be rude about President Trump. Nobody wants to be rude about President Trump, of course, if they want to travel to the U.S. Yes. in the future. But what on earth does that mean? So security guarantees, big problem. And then territory, this whole question about what happens in the east of Ukraine and whether Russia is prepared to make any concessions whatsoever is completely unresolved. It's all very well saying further plans of meetings planned for next week. But unless President Trump is prepared to play an even-handed role in these discussions and is prepared to put pressure on Moscow in the way that he has ceaselessly been putting enormous pressure on President Zelensky in Ukraine, there is no way that we're going to get an agreement. And indeed, the Russians have already said they will reject any change to the original 28-point plan that came out in November, which gives them everything. They said they won't accept anything except total victory. So I don't think we're making much progress here, Henry.
You speak about the vibes. What do you make of the news that Donald Trump spoke with President Putin before his meeting with President Zelensky? Now, you may say hardly surprising, but what sort of message does that send?
It's a very strange type of negotiation, isn't it? You remember way back in February, the first sign that we saw of the US getting involved in this conflict was when the US Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, suddenly announced at the Munich Security Conference that Ukraine would never get all its land back and would never join NATO. In other words, the US gave Russia two of its main demands before negotiation had even begun. And throughout these negotiations, the US has done very little to dispel the impression that they are completely in Russia's pocket on this. And every time that a US spokesperson, whether it is President Trump himself or most egregiously his chief negotiator, Steve Witkoff, every time they speak to the Russians, they come back speaking Russian talking points. There's an amazing interview, which I would encourage your listeners to have a look at, between Steve Witkoff and Tucker Carlson, the US talk show host, in March, where Steve Witkoff makes a series of points. Not only does he not know which parts of Ukraine have been occupied by Russia, but he comes up with a lot of Russian talking points, such as Ukraine's not a real country, or Russian-speaking Ukrainians are Russians, which is about as sensible as saying that people who live in Brazil are Portuguese, or people who live in Chile are actually Spanish.
Yeah, quite, and I have seen that interview. Lee, thank you very much for your time. That's Lee Turner, the former British ambassador to Ukraine, author of the book Lessons in Diplomacy, Politics, Power and Parties. Over to you now, your thoughts on whether this was just a question of vibes, really. Was it worth it, the meeting, that is, in order just to have those positive vibes, which I know may sound strange, but given the low point that we reached earlier on this year, a fair few months ago, with the incident in the Oval Office that was referenced, it couldn't have got any worse, admittedly, but the fact that tensions are starting to thaw, the fact that the pair can actually stand on a podium and not shout at each other, do we take that as a small victory? 0345 6060973, the number to call, President Trump and Vladimir Zelensky, that is. Your views on that in a moment. Also,
dogs. Yes, I think I prefer love.
But you have some dogs.
Oh, yes, and I love dogs.
President Macron leads tributes to the actress and animal rights campaigner who embodied a life of freedom, Brigitte Bardot, who's died at the age of 91. We'll look back at her life in a moment. First, though, 7:16 is the time, the news headlines with Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky say they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine. Israel's prime minister will meet with Donald Trump in Florida later to discuss a peace plan for Gaza. And a man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police after a car crash in Thetford. LBC weather feeling cold across the UK this morning, but staying dry for most, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC travel, I'm Joanne Webb in Heather Green. It's very busy on the South Circular Road in both directions, and that's because of an accident. On the A41 southbound, there are delays heading towards the Hemel Hempstead turnoff, and that's because a car's broken down and only one lane is open. On the trains, Chiltern Railways aren't running between Great Missenden and Amersham. That's because of safety checks. Also, Southern aren't running between Purley and Caterham, but that's because of a shortage of staff. Also on the trains, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services aren't going to and from Liverpool Street. Some trains can go from Stratford instead. And Weaver Line services aren't going to Liverpool Street as well. They're only going to London Fields.
This is LBC. At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to play BetVictor's daily free-to-play guaranteed prize wheel.
What guaranteed prizes does this guaranteed prize wheel guarantee?
The guaranteed prize wheel means you're guaranteed to win prizes, like free bets, free spins, exclusive offers and cash. Guaranteed.
What was it called again?
The guaranteed prize wheel.
Well, I guarantee I'll give it a spin.
And I guarantee you'll win a prize.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor's guaranteed prize wheel. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Opt in and spin the wheel. Rewards expire 24 hours after claiming. Gambleaware.org.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders ends 12th of January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Good morning, 20 minutes past 7 is the time. Henry Riley with you here on LBC till 10 o'clock. Let's go through the different pages of the newspapers. The Daily Mail, Kemi Badenoch, they have taken her comments. I don't want people who hate our country coming here. This is the Tory leader's fury after Starmer welcomes freed anti-Semitic, their words, Egyptian dissident who has called for the killing of British people. This is Ala Abd El Fattah, who we'll be talking about after 8. The Sun, for PT's sake, Gordon Ramsay gave a fiery speech at daughter Holly's wedding to Olympian Adam Peaty. This was the most read story on the BBC website a few days ago. I've got no idea why there's such interest in this. I know there's issues with sort of the family, but I'm amazed it's gotten so much attention. The Eye paper, chemical war fears as Trump and Zelensky seek peace deal. Trump says we have the makings of a deal as he welcomes Ukraine's leader in Florida to discuss plans to end the conflict as we're discussing this hour. The Daily Star, a story we'll turn to in a moment. And God created Brigitte Bardot, who has died at the age of 91. The Financial Times, again, leads with crunch talks. Zelensky and Trump meet, and there's a picture of the pair of them shaking hands outside a gold door in Mar-a-Lago. The Daily Mirror, La Belle Bardot, the screen legend Brigitte Bardot, who's died at the age of 91. In fact, all of the front pages have a picture of her in some form or another on the front page. The Daily Express, new care home inspection plans put residents at risk. Thousands of care home residents could be put at risk under a shake-up of inspections. The Guardian, Ukraine war talks are in final stages, says Trump. The US president speaks to Putin before meeting with Zelensky in Florida. What we are talking about this hour, by the way. Whose side do you think Donald Trump is on? Is he on Ukraine's side, or has he given the game away with that call to Vladimir Putin before? 0345 6060973, the number to call. I've lost the Daily Telegraph, so I can't tell you what that is, I'm afraid, but I can tell you the Times front page. Push to strip citizenship from thug hailed by PM. Activist welcomes to UK, back to UK. Also backed killing Zionists. 22 minutes past 7 is the time. John says, correct, Trump is being played. That last 10% is the stumbling block that can't be sealed. This is with regards to them saying that the security guarantees were 90% done. Steve says, I suspect millions of others in the UK and around the world would like to know what Vladimir Putin has got on Donald Trump. That seems to be what lots of people have said. Christine also says, there are rumours of Putin having something on Trump. Either that or Trump is being played by Putin. I fear for Ukraine's future. I think it's probably more the latter. I don't know if he has anything, obviously, but I would sort of doubt it. Pete, the pool man, says, yet another meeting with Trump and Zelensky. A complete waste of time. Russia has already won its war. It's a matter of time before NATO intervenes. World War III within a year, in my opinion. Or Happy New Year, Pete. I mean, Russia has admittedly a large control in certain regions like Donbass, but across the country, I think Russia still controls just shy of 20%. So this idea that it's over, Pete, I think you're a bit wide of the mark there. And Elaine says, I wonder if Trump forgets Putin has Assad at his side. This is, of course, President Assad as well, who did flee to Russia, didn't he, after the downfall of his premiership in, or dictatorship, I should say, actually, in Syria. 0345 6060973 is the number to call and the number to have your say, whether you do think Donald Trump is being played in some way by President Putin. Is my reading of this too cynical? Is it good that he is opening up channels of dialogue between Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky, talking about this trilateral meeting between the three? Is that a positive, or do you fear, like me, that actually it, not only is it all sort of scaffolding, it's all smoke and mirrors, but actually the most important issue is that Donald Trump is just calling up President Putin before he meets with Zelensky, and therefore you would imagine talking through a lot of his sort of main talking points. The number is 0345 6060973. We'll come to your views on that, more views on that in a moment. First though, Brigitte Bardot, the sex symbol and animal rights activist, has died, cultural icon too, at the age of 91.
You speak as if love were a kind of sickness. Don't worry about that, though. You've been vaccinated.
Enchantée, Mademoiselle Bardot. Mais vous parlez français? C'est merveilleux.
What is the truth about this girl, whose beauty and laughter once brightened the cafes and the boulevards of Paris? What is the whole truth about Dominique, the girl who lived for love?
And President Macron led tributes to Brigitte Bardot, one of the world's most celebrated post-war film stars and global sex symbol in the 50s and 60s, after her death at the age of 91. She actually gave up acting in 1973 at the age of 38 before dedicating herself to animal rights activism. And there was a fair bit of controversy about her later on in life, with outspoken denunciations of immigration, Muslims and homosexuality. Nonetheless, President Macron described her as a legend of the century, who embodied a life of freedom. Leila Latif is a film critic and joins me on the line now. Leila, what made Brigitte Bardot so special, so iconic? Good morning.
Good morning to you too. You know, some people just, I think, have like a magnetism. Some people have an X factor. I mean, like, she's extraordinarily beautiful in like the most classic of ways, but she had like a charisma about her, which I think, even though actually when you go into the filmography, it's not as rich as like many of her peers. But like, even just in an image, you're so drawn to her. You're so, you know, she's kind of fascinates in a strange way.
I was astonished to learn that, as I mentioned just then, she didn't sort of make even any cameo appearances after she gave up acting. I mean, gave it up in the 70s. That was it in her 30s, and really probably near the height of her fame, and never went back to it.
Yeah, there's something wonderfully French about that to me, where it's just like, oh, she just kind of like stumbled into movie stardom. And it's just like, oh, I tire of this. I'm going to move on to something else. There's a weird glamour to it. But yes, no, she just completely lost interest. But you know, again, you know, she's often compared to Marilyn Monroe, but Marilyn Monroe, I think, very much like dedicated herself to her craft and was very interested in developing as an actress in all these ways. Bardot, you just felt like, oh, this is just one chapter in a life.
Mm. And if we speak about the wider sort of cultural significance of Brigitte Bardot, I read that Bob Dylan is said to have written his first song about Bardot, the song for Brigitte, which was never released. Her influence in not just French film, but across the globe, can't really be overstated.
Yeah, and you think of Simone de Beauvoir, you know, one of the great feminist philosophers, one of the great French philosophers. You know, she identified Brigitte Bardot as a kind of like a symbol of female freedom. You know, she meant a lot to people, I think, in different ways. And yes, I mean, obviously there is like a side to this of things that she said that, not ideal. But, you know, I don't think we need to entirely throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to her legacy.
Quite. Thank you very much for your time. That's Leila Latif, who is a film critic. And as Leila mentioned right at the end there as well, there was controversy where she had various court appearances for her comments with regards to immigration, Muslims, homosexuality. She dedicated the rest of her life from the age of 38 to animal rights activism. The charity PETA have also paid respect to Brigitte Bardot, who's died at the age of 91. On that subject, I've only just seen it in the paper this morning, but I did want to say a Normandy veteran and prisoner of war has died at the age of 100, Doug Baldwin. And I had the pleasure of going to Normandy with Doug, what would have been last year, on the 80th anniversary of D-Day. He served with the King's Own Scottish Borderers aged 18, and he was made to work in coal mines as a prisoner of war by the Germans. And I saw him only a few months ago, actually, at a charity dinner. So very sad to say that Doug Baldwin has died at the age of 100, a Normandy veteran who landed in France 3 weeks after D-Day. Jerry is in Las Vegas on the subject of Ukraine. Good morning, Jerry.
Yeah, good morning to you. Full respect to the Second World War veteran there.
Yeah, he was a great man.
Mentioned him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've worked with some of them. 2 years ago, I did a job with a Second World War veteran.
Yeah, you never forget it, do you?
I find it, sorry, I've got a bit of a feedback there. I find it odd listening to your couple of your contributors there.
Okay.
You know, let me state a couple of points here. First of all, United States has 45,000 military in Japan, has 27,000 Korea. It has security for Taiwan. It's coming back for over 100 years. So it's quite a lot of commitment there, right? Any president in this country, first and foremost, their priority is to keep the politicians and the citizens of this, the taxpayers, because the taxpayers are the ones who pay for all the military. That seems to get lost in the conversation. They're the ones who pay for everything. And the amount of money going into the war between Ukraine and Russia.
No one's understating the significance of the United States, Jerry.
You're not? That's funny, because that's what I often hear that. This sort of dismissal. Henry, you've got to understand something, my man. It all comes down to dollars. It all comes down to finances.
Right.
I hear a lot of conversations. The bottom line is, and no military, look at the UK with the way it's reduced its military, right? It comes down to pounds and pence and dollars and cents.
Yes.
It has to be paid for, right? Number one. So when a president he is not a dictator. He has to go through Congress. He has to go through his Senate. They go through the financial bills. You got your Ukrainian contributor.
Sure, sure. But on Ukraine, Jerry, there's quite a lot of cross-party consensus in the United States.
There is. Where'd you hear that from? Well, if you could listen to any Congress or Senate, there's constant debates. Once again, their first priority.
Well, yeah, debates, but there's a general agreement about Russia being the aggressor.
Well, of course, there's no dispute. But the bottom line is, how do you prevent them from doing what they're doing? Now, the Ukraine joining NATO is never going to sit well with the Russians.
No, well, that is true. And I don't know whether that will happen anytime soon. Jerry, thank you. Sorry, we're just up against the clock. Appreciate it. Jerry there in Las Vegas. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060973. Also,
by the end of this parliament, we can still achieve our goal of cutting waiting times from 18 months, which we inherited, to 18 weeks, which is where they should always have been.
Well, now the number of GP appointments each month with a four-year wait has risen by nearly 250,000 since Labour took office. We'll bring you more on that in a moment. 7:32, the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump says a few thorny issues remain after trying to finalise a peace plan between Russia and Ukraine. The US president hosted his Ukrainian counterpart last night. Vladimir Zelensky says his country's borders must be respected in any deal. An activist has apologised for historical tweets in which he appeared to call for violence towards Zionists and the police. Ala Abed El Fattah flew back to the UK on Boxing Day, 6 years after being detained in Egypt on charges of spreading fake news. And a man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. The force says it happened last night after a collision in Thetford. Part of the A11 is still closed this morning. LBC weather feeling chilly across the UK this morning and staying dry for most. Sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees.
I'm Tom Swarbrick. Thank you for your calls throughout the year on LBC.
Because our young girls approach these foreign guys.
And so it's up to the girls to not approach people who they think might be foreign. What is that girl meant to... don't laugh, you despicable man. Why are you blaming a 15-year-old girl? Living as a woman doesn't make you a woman.
I trust people to be an expert in their own gender. If someone has been living as a woman for 15 years...
What does that mean, living as a woman?
I don't really know how I can answer the question again.
It's not about timeline.
You said
about
90
calendar.
Days, Mr. Booker. The president said 90 days.
Let me answer the question and don't interrupt me.
I'll choose when I speak. Please carry on.
No, then this interview is terminated.
I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
This is my car.
Well, I saw it first.
I sat in it first.
You horrible man.
Ow! Ooh.
At Harwoods, we think January sales should be civilised. That's why there's money off every new and approved used car until the 11th of January. Simply stroll to Harwoods Jaguar and Land Rover Crawley and Brighton, Harwoods Volvo Crawley, or Harwoods Audi Five Oaks and Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. The civilised January sale at Harwoods.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11am, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
At Morrison's, mix and match on three packs of the best party food and get one free. Serve up fancy New Year's Eve nibbles, like lobster and prawn mac and cheese bites, prawn coconut curry donuts, and then do your croquettes with tomato chilli jam.
Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
Majority of stores and online. Prices may vary at Morrison's daily. 176 to 304 grams, £6 each. Offer ends 31st of December.
On Booking.com, it's easy to book your holiday home. And thanks to flexible cancellation, there's no more.
Lodge is all booked, folks.
Mm. Oh, Kaz and Rob are coming now. Oh.
With Booking.com, you're free to be flexible.
Oh, easy.
So you can go from home to holiday home with no dramas.
Bigger place booked.
On Booking.com, finding a holiday home is easy.
And flex.
Booking.com. Booking.com. Yeah.
Terms apply. Available on selected properties.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:35 is the time. Good morning, Henry Reilly with you here for breakfast on LBC. If you're sick of me, I'm afraid you've got me right through until Sunday. I was doing 9 days of this. Cheap and available is the reason. 25 minutes away from, I just said that, from eight. Let's get the latest with the business news. Danny Hewson joins me on the line now, financial analyst at AJ Bell. Danny, thank you for joining us. Merry Christmas. Can I ask you first about retail? We spoke a lot about the Boxing Day sales a few days ago on LBC, and I read that there has been another blow to British high streets. Is that still concerned to the Boxing Day sales? Good morning.
Good morning and Merry Christmas. Yeah, I think a lot of people will be looking at when we get the Christmas shopping figures from our retailers to see whether it was a Merry Christmas for them or not. As you say, Boxing Day footfall was up. It was at a 10-year high, according to data from MRI, but the retail sector, as we know, has been under a huge amount of pressure. And there's been some data which has come out from the advisory firm Kroll, and it shows the number of retail firms entering administration rose by more than a fifth in the year to November. So 128 retail sector administrations compared with 115 administrations across the whole of 2024. So that's a 21.4% increase. And we know the story. Retailers have been telling us that costs have gone up. We've had, obviously, the impact of the national insurance changes, the increase in the national living wage, just costs in general, and the fact that a lot of consumers have been holding back. So even though we saw footfall up on Boxing Day, data from Barclays suggests that actually we were expecting to spend about £1 billion less this year in the Boxing Day sales than we did last year. And there's a really interesting piece on the LBC website going through some of the brands that have either closed stores or closed completely over the past year.
Can we focus on one particular shop on the high street? Why am I going to pay more for my chicken ramen now?
Yeah, Wagamama's had a tricky time at the start of 2025. Sales down quite significantly. The number of visitors to their restaurants were down. It's stabilised, so it's been really focusing on making sure that it was delivering value for punters. You'll have seen things like the £12 lunch deal and, its loyalty scheme and that kind of thing.
I haven't seen the £12 lunch deal, actually. I'm pleased you mentioned it.
Well, you might need to go and take a look at it. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that it wanted to do, to try and get people back through the doors. And it worked. But the £12 lunch deal, you might have to be quick because it's told shareholders that it's a distinct possibility. It is going to have to raise prices in 2026 by maybe as much as 5%. Now, it said selective price increases. It has tried to avoid them over the last year because it knows that people are thinking about how much they are spending and the cost of things. They want value for money, but all of those price pressures are meaning that it might have to hike prices in the new year.
Now, lastly, we're talking about the budget still because there are still more accusations that it is unravelling. And one of the flagship measures from Rachel Rees was this flagship, I just said flagship, one of the main measures was this stamp duty holiday on newly listed shares. And it looks like that's not going to save investors very much, having promised that it would.
No, I mean, my boss has already said that he thinks that this is just pure tokenism and that actually if you wanted to do something to actually get people to spend more, to invest more in UK shares, then you should scrap stamp duty on UK shares altogether. Because at the moment, if you buy £10,000 worth of UK shares, so Rolls-Royce, Marks and Spencers, then you are going to pay 50 quid on that. But if you buy the same amount of shares in Microsoft, Amazon, then you won't pay anything. So what Rachel Rees is trying to do by a number of measures, including adjusting the amount that you can pay into a cash ISA from 2027 if you are under 65, she wants people to invest in UK companies. So one of the things that she was doing is having this stamp duty holiday on newly listed companies. So you wouldn't pay this stamp duty on companies that listed in that first 3 years. But we are talking about people saving just 50 quid for this investment of 10,000. And all told, we're talking about a teeny tiny fraction of the amount of cash that is pulled in by stamp duty. So £50 million would be the savings. And the amount that stamp duty as a whole is expected to bring into the Treasury in the year 2030 is £5.3 billion. So you can just see that it is pure tokenism. And if you wanted to actually stimulate things, then maybe something a lot bigger is needed. But then, of course, that would impact the amount of cash coming into the Treasury's coffers.
Thank you, Danny. Danny Hewson is financial analyst at AJ Bell. Bob says the biggest crime is getting Ukraine to give up its nuclear weapons in negotiations with the promise of support from NATO. It sounds like Trump has stepped away from that position. Yes, well, that probably goes back to Minsk or probably Budapest in the 90s, doesn't it, I think. Mark says any peace talks without Putin at the table are meaningless. This is simply massaging Trump's ego. And Tony in Chichester says the war should have been over before it began. Ukraine was given security guarantees before when they gave up nuclear weapons. Oh, the point made by Bob as well. And if they had been honoured, then this war would have been over. How can we believe anything Trump says, let alone anything that Putin promises? And Elaine says, did you know Brigitte Bardot gave up acting because of a goat? Yeah, I did read this. There was a goat on a film set that she brought because she was worried about what would happen to it, I think. And so kept it in her hotel room. I do remember reading that. 7:42 is the time. Let's turn to another story. This is actually featured on a few of the front pages of the newspapers. The Daily Telegraph headline is month-long GP wait soar under Labour. Actually, it's basically the same headline on the front page of the Times as well. More than 7 million patients faced waits of 4 weeks or more between September and November, making it the worst autumn since records began. Let's get more on this now from Dr. Ellie Cannon, who is a GP and resident GP at the Mail on Sunday. Now, it's good news, Ellie, that waiting lists are coming down, but clearly not good news if you're trying to get a GP appointment very quickly. Is this your experience as well, where you are a GP?
Yes, it very much is. I mean, obviously, we've had a difficult few months. So we've had the experience of the resident doctor strike. We've had winter pressures changes, for example, in how junior resident doctors are being offered jobs. So there's been lots of changes in general practice. There's also been changes in how people access GP care. So you're being encouraged now not to phone at 8 a.m. but to use the online consultation systems. And, you know, that's going to, for a while, I think, add some pressure before it relieves the pressure, because obviously GP surgeries need to work out how they're going to be handling all of this extra contact.
Well, quite. And this number has risen now by 250,000 since Labour came to office. I mean, I know there's no sort of silver bullet or easy fix, Ellie, but what can be done, in your view, with your sort of frontline experience to at least alleviate that threat somewhat?
I mean, I've always noticed, and I've been a GP now for a long time, you know, the biggest issue that we have is not having the people on the ground. So that's the same whether you look at general practice or whether you look at labour wards and midwives or mental health services with psychologists. You need to invest in people. And unless you invest in people and encourage resident doctors to go into general practice, encourage nurses to go into general practice, you're not going to solve any of these issues. We've tried to plug the gaps with other types of healthcare professional, but at the end of the day, you need to have doctors on the ground, nurses on the ground. There are some GP surgeries in the country, particularly in underprivileged areas, where there are no full-time or permanent members of general practice staff. They're simply locums. So that's what we need. We need people on the ground.
Thank you very much for your time, as always. That's Dr. Ellie Cannon, GP and resident GP at the Mail on Sunday. You may have views on that. Are you having to wait? I mean, how long have you had to wait for a GP appointment? I'd be quite surprised that, I'm sadly not surprised, but it is pretty shocking nonetheless that a four-week wait to see a GP has risen by nearly 250,000 since Labour came to office. And as Ellie says there's no real simple way to alleviate that. There's going to have to be a real change, I fear. Otherwise, given the government have made the NHS and reforming it and improving it one of their main priorities, it's going to come back to bite them, I think. Your calls on that, and also back to the subject with which we started, Ukraine, 0345 6060973. Also,
they might be breathing hard and fast. They may also have chest recessions, which is the pulling in of the muscles between the ribs or under the ribs.
That's social media doctor Dr. Suj on the news that an asthma treatment that requires patients to only have two jabs a year will hopefully soon be made available in Britain. We'll give you the latest on that in a moment. First, though, 7:45, news headlines, Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump says a few thorny issues remain after trying to finalise a peace plan between Russia and Ukraine. The Conservatives are calling for a British-Egyptian activist to be deported after social media posts emerged where he called for Zionists to be killed. And a man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. LBC weather feeling cold across the UK this morning, but staying dry for most, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the South Circular Road in both directions at Hither Green, and that's all down to an accident right near to the railway bridge. On the A41, it's slow southbound going towards the Hemel Hempstead turnoff, and that's where a car has broken down. On the Underground, the Northern Line can't run between Battersea Power Station and Camden, and that's because of an ongoing investigation, and Waterloo Station is closed on the Underground, also because of an investigation. Also on the train, Southern aren't running between Purley and Caterham. That's because of a shortage of staff. And also, Southeastern trains aren't going to and from Victoria Station again today for engineering works.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor? Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two use.
from £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for socials, reported on games, and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Text 84850.
7:49 is the time. Good morning, Henry Reilly here on LBC. Coming up after 8, by the way, we are going to be talking about the Daily Telegraph uses the word extremist who must lose their citizenship, Keir Starmer has been told. This is Ala Abd El Fattah, who has called for Zionists to be killed, but was welcomed by our Prime Minister over the weekend. He was jailed by authorities in Cairo. The British government had been lobbying for his release. Important to say, by the way, not just the Labour government. He was granted citizenship by the Conservatives, and I look forward to speaking with Chris Philp, the Conservative Shadow Home Secretary, a little bit later on. But there are now calls for him to have his citizenship revoked. And if you look at some of the... And it's not like these are sort of private WhatsApps that have emerged. He tweeted these things. You could not get it more public. Why there's been no sort of vetting, or we're only just discovering these tweets now, just seems unbelievable to me. 10 minutes before 8 is the time. We spoke with the GP earlier on, Ellie Cannon. Joydip joins me, who is also a GP. Hello, Joydip.
Hi, morning. How are you?
Yes, good, thank you. How is Leyland in Lancashire, all right?
It's a bit icy. I'm driving off to Blackpool because I'm a GP there in a very deprived practice.
Ah, good segue into our conversation. Why did you call up?
Well, I think things have improved. I mean, it's not perfect, but things have improved because we've got online, I'll be brief, we've got online consultations now, which Labour have brought in, probably one of the few good things I think they've done. I've actually logged in this morning, actually, onto my computer, and I can see a few people waiting. I've triaged them. They're all going to get appointments today. They've got appointments within hours. So you send in your online consultation, you fill in a template, and then you just get triaged and put appropriately where you can be. Also, you can ask questions, you know, do I need this medication? Just simple queries. You get put with the appropriate person. I think it's a bit more, it's a lot more streamlined than the previous system.
Well, why is it not, why have we got so many people waiting more than a month to see a GP then?
I think that's a staff shortage.
Right.
That's a staff shortage.
Don't jump down my throat, Joydip, but could I suggest that, could GPs work longer hours or work on weekends in some cases?
I already do.
You already do, right. Not everyone does.
Yeah, I know that, but I think the problem is manpower or woman power. We just don't have enough boots on the ground and bums on seats. It's just really difficult to recruit at the moment. As you know, it's difficult to recruit for all over the NHS. My last 5 trainees are leaving. They're going to somewhere called Manitoba in Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah, those last 5 of them. I don't know what's going on there.
All to the same place?
Yeah, the same province, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Why can't we get people to work in the NHS, or specifically as a GP, then?
Well, I think it is, it's difficult to recruit. I think they look at the scheme and they look at the workload, and it's not very favourable. It's very high stress. You know, we're not the public's favourite people. A bit of a political football. They're being kicked around. Hard work. Lots of hours, and it's relentless. You know, the work is constantly coming in. It doesn't help that other parts of the NHS don't help us so much. Funding isn't great. I think it's a hard job to do. I think it's rewarding. That's why I'm still doing it. And there's lots of different things you can do. Like, I do a lot of teaching, for example.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are going into what we call portfolio GP careers. They're doing what I do, a bit of teaching, a bit of medical work, maybe working on a cruise ship for, you know, some of the time. Going into the MOD, Ministry of Defence, doing some work there.
So there's a lot of different sort of opportunities you can sort of pursue if you're a GP. Joined it, thank you. Appreciate the call. Sandra's in Enfield. Hello, Sandra.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And I would like to praise my GP service.
Oh, good.
It is incredibly good. You phone at 8, and of course you have to wait a while in the queue.
Yes. But you're part of the 8 a.m. scramble.
Yes, indeed. I'm not capable of doing it on the computer at 85 years of age. I'm not up to that. But they will kindly take me through a series of questions. And if they think I should see the doctor, then I am called back within the hour for an appointment that day.
Well, that's good. So they're working in Enfield, the GPs?
Yes, for our particular practice, it is absolutely first class, and you are seen. If you're not seen within one day, then they call you back and they give you a choice of appointments for the next couple of days.
Well, I'm pleased to hear it. Thank you, Sandra, and good health to you as well. Sandra there in Enfield. Let's stay with medical matters, and we read of an asthma drug that needs only 2 injections a year and has been described as life-changing. The jab is thought could cut hospital admissions by 72%. Let's bring into the conversation another doctor, Dr. Snehe Kemka, who is a doctor and medical commentator. How significant is this, in your view? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. It really is significant. This is one of these really good news stories that we should celebrate. This is a very powerful medication which has been proven in 2 very big trials to be extremely effective in people with severe uncontrolled asthma. And if you know anybody who is asthmatic, who's had a severe asthmatic attack, it can be very, very scary indeed, life-threatening indeed. And so these medications, when they come on the market, they really offer life-enhancing, life-saving qualities. So really good news.
Without going too technical, because I won't be able to keep up, but what does it do? What's it been shown to do in trials that means that this is so effective?
So, yes, I won't get too technical, but this is a biologic. So the biologics are a new class of medicine that have been out for the last few years, and they've made some real advances in cancer treatment and things like asthma. So what it does is it counters something called interleukin, which is an inflammatory factor, which is what causes the asthma to get really bad and for the airways to tighten up and constrict. And that's what causes the problems with breathing. So when this counters those interleukins, it stops the asthma attack actually happening in the first place. But I think it's worth noting that this is not for everybody. There are different types of asthma. There's different types of lung disease, COPD and other things. And so this is only going to be for certain types of people. It's indicated in severe asthmatics, and it's also indicated in a condition called chronic sinorrhinitis, where you can get polyps in the nose as well. And so it's been indicated for these 2 conditions.
And do we know when this will be available to people?
Well, there are 2 things in the UK to note. So this has received approval from the MHRA, which is the regulatory body. The MHRA defines whether something is safe or not. So the authorities have said that this is safe, and this is out in the United States and elsewhere already. But now it's up for NICE, which is the body that defines whether this is cost-effective, to say whether this is going to be available on the NHS. So it'll be available privately fairly soon, but it may take a good couple of years before it becomes available on the NHS, if indeed it gets approval from NICE, because these drugs are not cheap. They cost somewhere between £20,000 to £30,000 a year, even though it's just 2 injections. And so what NICE needs to do is weigh up whether it's worth the money or not.
Well, as you say, let's celebrate that good news. Thank you for your time. Dr. Snake Emker is a doctor and medical commentator. This from, where's it gone? Kirsty says, back to GPs. I had a great experience with a new e-consult. I filled in my form at 12:45 on Christmas Eve and was called by a doctor at 2 p.m, had an appointment at 3, and a prescription by 3:20. Well done, NHS, says Kirsty in Letchworth. Well, I'm pleased it seems to be, in some cases, that it is working. Ilford and, was it Enfield? I can't remember where it was now. It was Enfield, that was it. Enfield and Letchworth is working well. And this from Nigel says, my son leaves the UK with his family to Canada as there are no GP jobs for him in the West Sussex area with which he lives. I expect to see university applications down massively this summer. Those who want to be a doctor with UK pay rates so low compared with Canada, Australia and New Zealand. Well, as actually what Ian Payne was talking about this morning, record number of people leaving the UK. We are going to move on. Thank you very much for your messages on that. Coming up,
it's our bins as well. Our bins are not getting touched as well. But you've got to make a stand somewhere.
That's the bin strike that's been going on for nearly a year. Now pro-Palestinian protesters have said they'll protest outside councillors' homes. What would that achieve? Plus,
let's get Brexit done, my friends, and let's unleash the potential of this country.
We'll be speaking with an SNP politician. They say the greatest gift to the Scottish economy would be a return to the European Union. Would you back that move? And
I am one of many thousands in Britain and all around the world who are deeply concerned about the fate of the writer, Alaa Abd El Fattah.
Yes, one of the celebrities who's backed this man coming back to the UK, someone who said they want to kill Zionists.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky say they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine, but they say some thorny issues remain after their talks in Florida. Alina Holushka from the International Center for Ukrainian Victory told LBC there are still some major sticking points.
I haven't heard anything clear. One thing that is really missing, there will be no effective peace process. And that's pressure on Russia. Because if the talks aren't resolving the underlying problem, Russia's desire to restore their empire, then there won't be peace. And we do not see any wish of the President Trump to put even minimal pressure on Russia.
The Conservatives are calling for a British-Egyptian activist to be deported after social media posts emerge where he called for Zionists to be killed. Alaa Abd El Fattah has apologised unequivocally and says some of his old tweets have been twisted out of meaning. A man believed to have had a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. Emergency services were called out to a collision on the A11 in Thetford last night. LBC's Louisa Jackson has the details.
Assistant Chief Constable David Buckley said in a statement, "We understand this incident will cause concern in the community. Our highly trained armed officers deploy to hundreds of firearms-related calls each year, but incidents where police discharge firearms are thankfully incredibly rare. A full and independent investigation is already underway. They are not looking for anyone else in connection with the incident."
An investigation is underway after a house fire in Kent led to the death of a child. Another was taken to hospital after emergency services were called out to Ham Street in Ashford yesterday. Three firefighters also suffered minor injuries. Forecasters say we should prepare for a bracing start to the new year. Two amber health alerts have already been issued covering the northeast and northwest of England. Temperatures are expected to fall to around -4, with some snow predicted in the northwest later this week. And England bowler Gus Atkinson has been ruled out the final Ashes test against Australia with a hamstring injury. He joins fellow pacemen Jofra Archer and Mark Wood on the sidelines. LBC weather, feeling chilly across the UK this morning and staying dry for most. Sunshine in Scotland and the north of England with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
What? You didn't know you could get club card prices on Tesco travel insurance? Get away! Get 20% off your travel insurance in our winter sale and join over 1 million customers who have already trusted us with their cover. Buy direct using your club card to get 20% off. Hurry, offer ends January the 30th. Search Tesco Travel Insurance and get a quote direct today. Don't miss our winter sale. Underwritten by AWP, PNC, SA. Offer excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning. 3 minutes past eight is the time you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Later on this hour, the pro-Palestinian activists that have threatened Birmingham councillors over bin strikes, saying they'll demonstrate outside their family homes. Is it ever acceptable to go outside the home of a politician in order to make your point? Plus, the sound of the barbers, a sound that may sound quite alien to Labour MPs soon. Not only have they been banned from pubs, now hairdressers and barbers have started to ban Labour MPs from entering their premises. We'll discuss the report that says benefit claimants travel. The cost has gone up by £750 million since the pandemic. Travel for those who have ADHD, for example. Should that really be something the taxpayer has to foot? And
it's Nick Kyrgios that secures victory in the battle of the sexes here in Dubai.
Yes, the bizarre tennis match that took place yesterday in Dubai. Battle of the sexes. It's not like the one that took place in the 1970s. The court looked weird and seemingly no one really watched it.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
4 minutes past eight is the time. Good morning to you. Later on this hour, we're going to be joined by the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, on the story with which I'm keen for your views now. Push to strip citizenship from thug hailed by PM is the front page of the Times. So Keir Starmer is facing calls from senior Labour MPs to strip Alaa Abd El Fattah of his British citizenship, as Number 10 said the Prime Minister was unaware of past comments made by the Egyptian dissident. Ministers were among those who've criticised an apparent failure to conduct background checks on the British-Egyptian man who was freed from jail and welcomed back to the UK last week by Keir Starmer. They privately called the Prime Minister's intervention ridiculous and shocking. These are Labour politicians, by the way. And said Fattah should lose the British citizenship that he gained, important to say, under the Conservatives, back in December 2021. Now, yesterday, the Foreign Office issued a statement condemning Fattah's past remarks, which included calling for the death of Zionist civilians, suggesting people burn down Downing Street during the 2011 riots. And yet this is a man we're welcoming back to the UK. It's understood that Fattah's posts were not known to Starmer, or indeed Yvette Cooper, the Foreign Secretary, or David Lammy, the Deputy Prime Minister, when they offered similar message of support on Boxing Day when marking the release. However, senior Labour MPs said that Starmer had lost the trust of British Jews, one minister saying it's truly shocking that we've welcomed a racist anti-Semite into our country with open arms. Serious questions now need to be asked. And we have heard from Mr. Abd El Fattah, who has apologised for his past remarks, saying, I understand how shocking and hurtful they are, and for that I unequivocally apologise. He says, I'm shaken that just as I'm being reunited with my family for the first time in 12 years, several historic tweets of mine have been republished and used to question and attack my integrity and values, escalating to calls for the revocation of my citizenship. Well, I mean, if you look at some of the things that he has said, they're absolutely disgusting, saying that he hates white people, that he hates, and indeed in some cases, has spoken about killing Zionists. Nigel Farage has now called for his citizenship to be revoked. He's described British people as dogs and monkeys and has called repeatedly for the killing of Zionists, as I mentioned. He obtained citizenship, the Telegraph can reveal, without going through good character checks. The thing that strikes me is, it's not as though these were private WhatsApps that were released. I mean, these were comments that he put on social media, that he put on X. Quite why there have been no background checks, I have no idea. Jonathan Sacerdoti joins me, who's a journalist and broadcaster. Your view on this man being welcomed seemingly with open arms into the UK, Jonathan. Morning.
Good morning. Well, this is a complete sham, and Britain, the UK, has imported a security and public order problem and is legitimising someone that the Egyptians have labelled as violent or extremist. And I think that that's a very sorry state of affairs. But what makes this so much worse is not just that it happened, but that Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, and countless others, actually, took to Twitter, took to X, with these gushing posts about how this had been the top priority of this government since it came to office. Just let that sink in. Not your rising bills, not homelessness in the UK, not the safety of the children who'd been raped in the paedophile rape gangs, not an inquiry into that, none of those things. It was the bringing to the UK of this Egyptian man who had only recently been given British citizenship under a Conservative government, I might say, and bringing him to the UK after he was released from prison in Egypt. This is absolutely shameful. It makes no sense at all. And all of these pathetic apologies on the man's part, I mean, we can dismiss that instantly. It's nonsense. And all of these weird apologies now from even a few members of parliament saying they didn't know, including Keir Starmer, apparently didn't know about these tweets, which have been given press coverage over the years. This is a very high profile case. There's literally no way that he and his advisers shouldn't have been aware. If they aren't aware, we need to ask now very deep questions about the vetting process. Who is within the British establishment that has been putting files before the Home Office, the Foreign Office, the Prime Minister, without that information in it? Because those people must be thoroughly examined. We must understand if they have any affiliations, say, to organisations like the Muslim Brotherhood, whether there is a reason that they've been hiding this man's extraordinary anti-British, anti-civilization tweets and statements. He has been very clear about white people, British people, English people, Americans, Zionists. Mm. It's not just Zionists in Israel. This man has declared violent and death wishes for all of those groups.
Yes, I mean, he said, I seriously hate white people, especially those of English, Dutch or German descent. What should happen next? Because noting, of course, we don't want the man, despite those abhorrent remarks, to be in prison in Egypt, I should say.
I don't care if he's in prison in Egypt, actually. I don't see why we should care about that at all.
Well, I think the point before we knew about these tweets is the fact that he is a British man who is imprisoned for seemingly a false charge.
He shouldn't be a British man. He should have his British citizenship revoked. It should never have been given to him. This man has a very tenuous link to Great Britain. He managed to get this through his mother, who was born in Great Britain. But this, you know, this is the problem with our country at the moment, is that it, among other things, is that it seems obsessed with process and with the letter of laws rather than looking at survival. It is obvious that you don't give British citizenship to somebody who literally has, you know, very tenuous, if any, connection to our culture, our history, having lived here very much. Really no connection, as far as I can see, in any normal person's mind to this country. And then openly expressing these outrageous views and being judged by the Egyptian authorities. Now, look, I don't place too much trust in the Egyptian authorities either, but being judged by them and their courts and their police as having been somebody of great risk to that country and being put in jail. It's absolutely absurd that we gave him British citizenship.
There should, of course, have been checks. We are where we are now. What should Sir Keir Starmer do? Can he recover from this?
He should do everything he can to undo this, firstly, the preposterous statement he made about this being his top priority, and all of his various ministers and colleagues who expressed their delight at him coming back, and that, you know, daddy was coming home to his son and all this nonsense. All those loveys that signed the letters and what have you should also hang their heads in shame, but that's all irrelevant. This needs undoing. This country has enough potentially violent security threats in it already. We all know that. We shouldn't be inviting in and welcoming publicly new ones. So he needs to do absolutely everything he can to undo this preposterous situation. I'm not a legislator, I'm not a lawyer, but there are plenty of them in this country and plenty at his disposal. They need to deal with this properly, and they need now, you see, the enemy of a good idea isn't its opposite, it's its extreme. So if this country has the good idea of fighting for British nationals who are in jail abroad, fighting for justice of those people, those are all very valid and worthy ideas, but you don't take them to such ridiculous extremes as to do it for this man who's expressed these views. This needs undoing immediately.
Thank you for your time. Jonathan Sacerdoti is journalist and broadcaster. Before we bring in the index on censorship into this conversation, we mentioned, Jonathan mentioned some of those loveys, as he called them. This you will hear now from Brian Cox, the actor, Khalid Abdallah, Bill Nighy, Harriet Walter, Joseph Fiennes, and Emily Watson campaigning for his release.
Prime Minister Starmer.
Dear Prime Minister Starmer.
Dear Prime Minister Starmer.
Dear Prime Minister Starmer.
Prime Minister, I'm making this video because I, like a lot of people, and I should imagine yourself included, are deeply concerned.
Dear Prime Minister, I'm reaching out to you today because I'm extremely worried.
I am one of many thousands in Britain and all around the world who are deeply concerned about the fate of the writer, Alaa Abdel Fattah.
The brilliant, courageous and inspiring writer who has been unjustly imprisoned in Egypt for far, far too many years.
Some of the actors campaigning for the release. I mean, in fairness, if our politicians didn't know, then I suppose who were they to know? But do they look slightly silly now? I'll take your thoughts on that in a moment. First, though, Jemima Steinfeld joins me, who is CEO of the Index on Censorship. Should this man be in the UK, do you think, Jemima? Good morning.
Good morning, Henry. To be honest, it's not for me to answer that question. My organisation's campaigns for freedom of expression around the world, and we campaigned for the release of Alaa because, and I want to put this on the record here, I think his statements that have been unearthed are horrendous, are vile, but that is not why he was in jail in Egypt. He was in jail for peaceful protests, for doing things like, I mean, the latest one for 5 years was because he reposted about torture in Egyptian prisons. LCC is an authoritarian. He has been escalating his attacks. And that is why Alaa was in jail. And that is what we campaign against. We don't campaign for perfect people. If we were to campaign for perfect people, we wouldn't be campaigning for very many. You know, I can list many people like Assange and Navalny, etc., who do not have perfect records and who've been, you know, have caused a lot of upset, but we campaign for principles and the principle still stands. So I think it was completely right for there to be a campaign around his freedom. That is separate to what he said, and that is a separate question to whether he should be in the UK. Now, I can't answer that. What I can say is, at least in the UK, whatever happens now should be free and fair compared to what happens in Egypt.
Yeah, and I take that point, and on the principle of it, because the sort of trumped up charges that he was imprisoned in Cairo do not stack up, admittedly. But do you understand why people are saying, well, why was none of this made aware? We had his mum on TV calling for his release, and we had all of these actors coming on, organisations like yourself saying it's terrible what's happened to him. Should we not have been given some more context into some of his views?
I mean, look, I understand entirely why people are upset. We're at a very febrile moment. There's anti-Semitism is sky high. It should be taken incredibly seriously. So I understand why people feel this way. And I, you know, I said I don't condone at all what he said or dismiss it. I also think that what people were campaigning for was ultimately an authoritarian action on the part of Egypt and whether that was right or not. And, you know, that still stands.
So does it not matter what someone says in order to campaign for their release? Where do you draw the line?
Well, he wasn't in prison for those comments.
Of course he wasn't. But where do you draw the line when someone is in prison, albeit on a different charge, and then has said some horrendous things in the past?
I think it's very, very difficult. And it's actually something that we talk about often at Index when we deal with people, as I mentioned, people like Julian Assange, where they are... their records might not be perfect. What we do is we campaign on the principles and whether they should be in prison for what they were in prison for. And we stick to that. So, you know, as I said, I think two things can be true at once. I think it's absolutely correct to be asking these questions right now. What the answers are to these questions, I don't know. But I also think it's correct to say what happened to him was wrong.
Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated. Jemima Steinfeld is CEO of the Index on Censorship. Keir Starmer said, I'm delighted that Alaa Abdel El Fattah is back in the UK and has been reunited with his loved ones who must be feeling profound relief. I want to pay tribute to Alaa's family, to those who have worked and campaigned for this moment. Alaa's case has been a top priority for my government since we came to office. I'm grateful to President Sisi for his decision to grant the pardon. If tweets aren't enough for you, by the way, in 2014, it was revealed that he was dropped as a nominee for a human rights award over tweets calling for the murder of Israelis back in 2014. How there's been no sort of vetting or this man hasn't been picked up seems extraordinary to me. Your calls in a moment, 0345 6060 973. First, though, 8:17 is the time. Let's get to the news headlines with Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky say they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine. Israel's prime minister will meet with Donald Trump in Florida later to discuss a peace plan for Gaza. And a man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police after a car crash in Thetford. LBC weather feeling cold across the UK this morning, but staying dry for most, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the South Circular Road eastbound at Hither Green. It's all down to that accident that's happened near to the railway bridge. One lane's closed on the A4 westbound at Gillette Corner at Brentford, and that's where a coach has broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. On the trains, Chiltern Railways aren't running between Great Missenden and Amersham. That's for some safety checks. Southeastern aren't going to and from Victoria today for the engineering works, and Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services aren't going to and from Liverpool Street, and that's also for engineering works. On the DLR, they're running to a Saturday timetable today, and no district line between Earls Court and Kensington Olympia.
This is LBC.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders ends further January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Henry Riley on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Keir Starmer saying a few days ago that this case has been a top priority for his government ever since they came to office. I'm delighted that Alaa Abdel Fattah is back in the UK and has been reunited with his loved ones, who must be feeling profound relief, as is pointed out in a piece in The Telegraph today. He's previously described himself as a racist white hater and has said that killing Jewish people is heroic. Quite whether this is someone we really want to welcome in the UK with open arms, I think is, we shouldn't even really be a debate, should it? Previous tweets, hate white people. They don't understand sharing or community, a blight on earth. Good thing they stopped breeding. Yes, I consider killing any colonialists and specifically Zionists heroic. I mean, you just go through this beggar's belief. Police are not human. They don't have rights. We should just kill them all. I am a racist, I don't like white people, so something off. I mean, this is a man we've just allowed back in the UK. And Keir Starmer saying it's a massive priority for him. Tony's in Battersea. Tony, your view?
I just feel as if he's being singled out because...
Oh, come on.
Same said... Hold on. Let me just say my view. Like, I know you do have a valid point in what you're saying.
Okay, go on, what's your view?
Right, but at the end of the day, the same said people he's talking about didn't have anything nice to say about the children and people in Gaza at all. Never once.
But that's not what he's talking about. If he was talking about suffering in Gaza, which I'm sure he has, that doesn't say that you should kill all Zionists and white, and that he hates white people and that the police should be killed.
That's very true. But certain people from the same said land have come along and said what they're going to do to the same said set of people and got away with it without a trace of a hint in it's okay.
Is this someone you want in the UK, Tony?
Do you know what? For me, it's neither here nor there because I'm on my way to exiting the UK.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? So, because nothing here is of any value or any, like, people that are in power don't seem to have intelligence anymore. They just don't. Everybody that's in the top are just very unintelligent. Unintelligent people. And the way how you and me and the people around you are working are just being taken everything out of. So my views on England right now is I can't wait to leave. But well, I just feel as if...
You may want to leave, but I mean, there's still, I imagine, friends and family you have here, Tony, and you still care about this country if you've lived here for some period of time.
I worked here with the NHS for 30-odd years. I got injured, I got sciatica, I got cancer, and I went to get a mobility thing, and they gave me 2 points short. And I gave all the evidence of being a mental health officer, working with autistic children, giving myself 12-hour shifts over the pandemic, and they shorted me 2 points for mobility.
Wow.
And I have no love.
Okay. Well, I get your frustration. I have to say, I profoundly disagree with you, though, that you can, in some way, because people have been silent, you would say, on the issue of Gaza, that you sort of just allow anyone in who has spoken up on behalf of those people. I mean, I think that's a double standard, Tony, but I'm grateful you called in. Thank you. Mark's in Dagenham. Hi, Mark.
Hello, dear.
Hello.
I think people are being extremely unfair on this Al-Fatah,
yes. Why?
When I look at the tweet, and you could say they're outrageous, the fact is...
Mark, could you talk into the phone? I'm struggling to hear you. Could you talk into the phone?
Oh, right, sorry, yeah, I've got you on speaker, hold on.
Yeah, that's all right. We'll edit this bit out.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, like you're in the room. What were you saying?
Yeah, I think this Allah chap has been. I think the tweets that they are so outrageous. They're obviously not intended. Well, many of them are not intended seriously. Some of them mean the precise opposite of what they're saying.
Like what?
Like where he says the Holocaust wasn't a genocide because people survived. That's a carbon copy of what people say to defend Israel's actions against the Palestinians.
It's a very offensive thing to... And also, when he's... I mean, this is a man also who said that he hates white people and that he's talked about killing Zionists.
Well, I don't think it's... I don't think he was serious when he says about hating white people. I think it's, again, it's too absurd
to be serious.
But respectfully,
Mark, how do you know that?
Well, how do you know that it's so serious?
He's written it down and put it on social media.
He's written it down and put it on social media. But where was the context? What was he responding to?
Don't tweet it in the first place, then.
Sir, you're saying after he served 12 years in prison, he should suffer some more punishment.
I'm not saying he should suffer punishment. I'm just saying we shouldn't...
You don't know the context, because you're not even looking into it.
Mark, I have a list of what he has said. I'm not saying... clearly the charges in Egypt...
You've got a list of what he said. You don't have a list of what he was responding to.
Yes, Mark, he was in Egypt on trumped up charges. I agree. However, quite frankly, I don't know if I want a man in the UK who says, police are not human, they don't have rights, we should just kill them. Where's the context?
About police brutality in Egypt during the Arab Spring.
All right, let's go through some other ones then. Effing hate white people. They don't understand sharing or community. A blight on earth they are. Good thing they stopped breeding. He's hilarious, isn't he?
It's not funny, but it's obviously ridiculous because obviously he must be intelligent enough to know white people haven't stopped breeding. So he's saying something absurd... Presumably in response to something that you are not telling us because you haven't looked into it.
But why has it been our top priority then? Keir Starmer saying it's been a top priority of the government.
I've got no idea about that. Well, okay. I think he's suffered 12 years in prison. He said where he's offended people. He's sorry. He's explained what he was saying.
Yeah, okay, well, we're not going to agree on this, but Mark, it's Merry Christmas, love to the family. Thank you, Mark, there in Dagenham. More calls in a moment. In a completely different story, I was reading this in the Telegraph yesterday, activists have threatened to protest outside the family homes of local politicians over the Birmingham bin strikes. Ahmed Yaqub and Shakil Afsar, who ran as independent candidates in last year's election on pro-Gaza tickets, have warned that if the bin strikes are not resolved, they'll turn up outside family homes of city councillors to demonstrate. Ahmed Yaqub, the activist and lawyer, joins me now. Have you been misquoted, or is that true, Mr. Yaqub? Good morning.
Good morning, Henry. No, that's true. That's true. That's actually true.
Okay.
Because it's disgusting what's happening with the bin men, and it's disgusting how the council are cutting their wages. These people work hard, and we will stand with workers wherever we can.
Yes, well, no one doubts that, and everyone, not least the people of Birmingham, want a result and a solution to this bin strike. But these are the family homes. People will have children present and other relatives.
That's fine. I mean,
it's not a protest.
Nobody said that.
But why should you be demonstrating outside someone's family home?
If you let me talk, please do not interrupt me. I haven't come here to get interrupted. Well, let me finish my...
Well, respectfully, I'll ask you. You're the one who's planning to protest outside people's homes, so I'll ask you difficult questions. I'd like to know your answer. Oh, lovely interview. He's gone. Well, is he gone? Yes. Hello? Are you still there?
Ask difficult questions.
Oh, you're still there. Well, go on.
Difficult questions, no problem.
No problem.
No
okay.
Question is difficult, but
well, tell
you,
me
should,
then.
You should have the respect to okay. allow me to finish.
The floor is yours.
Okay. Protesting is a democratic right, and we are well within the law and the remits of the law when we go and protest. Whether it is outside somebody's workplace or whether it is outside somebody's home, the main focus of activism and the main priority here is to have table talks with the council. The council are not listening. They're not listening at all. They don't want to sit around the table with the workers. So some disruption has to be made. There has to be disruption for us to be noticed. Otherwise, we don't get noticed, do we? They've been trying for 1 year. There's been no contact, no communication. As soon as we went outside there, there's calls, there's phone calls, there's dialogue. So it works, doesn't it?
Well, it works in terms
protesting
of the fact...
works.
Well, we're talking about you discussing it. What I can't understand, though, is why you just don't demonstrate on the picket lines. I know you have been on a picket line, but outside the council chamber. Quite frankly, Mr. Yaqub, I think it's pretty disgraceful to demonstrate outside someone's family home when their children are there. How do you think that makes you look?
That's your opinion, Henry. We are standing with the workers. If the workers who have got families, who can't feed their families, who can't feed their children, who are struggling to pay the bills because of the cuts.
I know, but Mr. Yaqub, how does camping outside someone's home change that or help that?
It's disruption. We don't get noticed. Otherwise, you have to cause some sort of disruption to get noticed. And at this moment in time, it is not illegal to go and protest outside anyone's home.
Yeah.
When it is illegal, we won't do it, or we won't threaten to do it.
How would you feel if people camped outside your house?
Because we are always in the remits of the law.
How would you feel if someone camped outside your house?
Well,
I don't think you'd like it very
like
much.
I wouldn't like it, but
yeah.
The difference here is... Yeah, but let me explain. The difference here is I can go out in public, I meet the public... I am not hated that much that the public want to come outside my house and protest. The public actually support me, so hopefully that's never going to happen when
well,
it comes to me.
I hope you don't have people protesting outside your house, Mr. Yaqub, and I hope you don't do it to other people, because I think it's pretty nasty, to be honest. But thank you for your time. Ahmed Yaqub is activist and lawyer who has threatened to protest outside councillors' homes. More calls in a moment. You might have views on that if you live in Birmingham or in another area. 8:32 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump says a few thorny issues remain after trying to finalise a peace plan between Russia and Ukraine. The US president hosted his Ukrainian counterpart in Florida last night. Volodymyr Zelensky says his country's borders must be respected in any deal. An activist has apologised for historical tweets in which he appeared to call for violence towards Zionists and the police. Ala Abed El Fattah flew back to the UK on Boxing Day, 6 years after being detained in Egypt on charges of spreading fake news. And a man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. The Force says it happened last night after a collision on the A11 in Thetford. LBC weather, feeling cold across the UK this morning and staying dry for most, a high of 7 degrees.
I'm Andrew Marr. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC. You can say to the British people on Budget Day, look, things are really bad, therefore I have to raise income tax. So tomorrow I'm going to resign as Chancellor of the Exchequer, having done the right thing.
And what do you think would happen in financial markets if I did that?
It depends who took over.
President Trump seems to be waking up every morning with a new idea, and be it tariffs or something else. In my personal opinion, I don't think he's thought it through.
What's your verdict so far on how it's going?
Despair of the risk-free, be all things to all men approach of Keir Starmer, which I think is a fool's errand.
I'll be back in the new year leading Britain's conversation.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Our pet's in a pickle. We know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC with Henry Reilly. Text 84850.
8:35 is the time. Good morning, Henry Reilly with you here on LBC. We're talking primarily this hour. You may have views on my previous conversation with Ahmed Yacoub about protesting outside people's homes. But this push to strip citizenship from a man hailed by the Prime Minister, Ala Abdel El Fattah, of his British citizenship. It was granted under a Conservative government, but he was welcomed by Sir Keir Starmer. He said it was a top priority for my government since we came to office. He said that a few days ago. Khalid's in Leicester. Hello, Khalid.
Hi, Henry.
Hi. What do you think?
I think, look, we have to have consistency in application of law and international law. The problem that we have is that there's one rule for one rule for another. If somebody commits a crime, I don't know this particular person's background, etc. I mean, apart from what you're hearing on the media.
What he said,
But what I'm saying, my point is, the thing is, there has to be consistency. We have people condemning, we have people calling for violence in, across the board, governments, etc. The problem is we support some certain governments.
Do we have calling for violence across the board?
We've got UK being consistent,
about individuals, though. I mean, what can you compare to what British politician or public figure who has called for death to Zionists, for example?
not death to Zionists. I'm saying, look, if we call for death of innocence, if anybody calls for the death of innocence, that is a criminal act, and that should be condemned, and the full force of the law should be applied. For example, we have Sunak going across to Netanyahu saying, you know, we want you to win. You know, that's ridiculous. And what was winning? You know, and even Jonathan Saad, I can't even say his name, Saad Sadati, who just came on just now, you should challenge him. Yes, I said. Well, he should be challenged on what he's saying. Look, he's also stated that all the violence and all the killings he saw in Gaza, it's all fake. You know, this is his word. These are his words. Well, he's been condemned for this.
Look, he's not here to defend himself. I don't know if he has said that. I will look up to see what he said on the matter. But yes. On this individual, do you understand why people are calling for his citizenship to be revoked?
I understand, but the problem we have, Henry, is that, look, you know, for example, Shamim Mbeng went to Syria. She didn't pick up, as far as I'm aware, she didn't even pick up a gun, and her citizenship was revoked. Yet we have people going from the UK, British nationals, going, and they have recorded their own crime and war crimes online. They posted it online. They're coming back to the UK. When I'm talking about Gaza, they went to Gaza. They've committed their war crimes. They posted it online. It's online. Yeah. Anybody can see that. And they're not. And nothing is happening to them. They're being let off the hook. This is the inconsistency. This is what infuriates everybody. That's why you'd have people going, you know, going outside the politician's house, because nothing is being done. There's no consistency in application of law. Why is it one rule for one rule for another? This is where the frustration lies in the public. Everybody's frustrated that, look, you know, if there is a rule, there's a rule across the board. Don't say, you know, we let some people off the hook, the immunity for some people, but some people, we're going to throw everything at them.
OK, thank you, Khalid, in Leicester. John, coming to you in a second, 0345 6060973, the number to call if we press pause on that conversation and talk about the greatest gift to Scotland's economy would be a return to the European Union, so say the SNP, the Scottish National Party. Stephen Gethins is the SNP MP for Arbroath and Broughty Ferry and joins me on the line now. Why so, Stephen Gethins? Good morning.
Morning, Henry. Thanks so much for having me on. Well, it's a statement of the obvious, isn't it? We've seen reports about the horrendous cost of Brexit, costing us £3,500 per person, stagnating living cost of living going up, stagnating quality of life, £250 million every single day to the public, to the taxpayer being cost by Brexit. What a mess. What an absolute disaster it's been. And now that we're, you know, entering into the 10th anniversary of that vote, it seems like a good time to reflect.
Well, for such a major decision, I take it you would want some form of referendum in order to enact it.
I think so. I think that'd be a sensible thing to do with options. Of course, Scotland voted to remain in the European Union, not once, but twice. We voted to remain in the 1970s, and then we voted to remain again in 2016. But of course, at a UK level, should the UK wish to return, I've got nothing against having an EU referendum. But given the huge cost to the public taxpayer, taxes going up to pay for Brexit, cost of food going up due to Brexit, it just seems like the right thing to do when people are struggling and we've seen absolutely no benefit whatsoever.
I'm told it's pronounced Broughty Ferry, by the way, so I apologise. I've heard Broughty, a message. Jason has messaged in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but make sure I get that right.
I didn't want to correct you. I've just had my relatives up from down south and I've been correcting them. So I didn't want to
spend Christmas correcting them. This is all coming though at a time, Mr. Gethins, you will know, where you are being massively challenged by Reform UK ahead of crucial elections in Scotland. How is pledging to return to the EU going to win over Reform voters?
I'm not sure the SNP has been massively challenged by the
opinion
voters.
Polls. They're doing pretty well in Scotland.
They are about 17 points behind the SNP in Scotland at the moment. The SNP's got a strong lead. The reason why the SNP has a strong lead over Reform and Labour and the Conservatives is that I think in politics sometimes you should say what you believe in. The SNP believes that we should return to the European Union. You know, it's pretty old-fashioned, but I sit in the chamber hearing Keir Starmer, Kemi Badenoch and others fudging. Say what you believe in. You know, let's have an open and honest debate with Reform. because Reform's track record isn't terribly good. They campaigned to leave the European Union that is costing people money. £3,500 per person, the cost of living going up. So, you know, call me old-fashioned, but sometimes parties should say what they believe in, stick to it, campaign on it, and let people decide. And at the moment, the SNP is far ahead of Reform. Yes, there's a challenge. Nobody takes things for granted on the run-up to an election, as we have this year in Scotland. But let the people decide. And at the moment, the SNP is winning that argument. And the facts are pretty overwhelming when it comes to Brexit as well.
Your leader in Westminster, Stephen Flynn, has said that Matthew Doyle, who's the former Director of Communications for Sir Keir Starmer, should not be appointed to the House of Lords. This is because of his connection with Mr. Morton, who is sort of relevant to the Scotland conversations. He was running in a council by-election there. He's also a former Labour councillor. Do you think you'll be successful, or do you think Lord Doyle will become a reality?
Here's the thing. The House of Lords is an abomination. You know, a lot of these people who are now in the Lords campaigned to leave the European Union talking about unelected bureaucrats. The EU has no such thing. Whereas in the UK, more than half of parliamentarians in Westminster are appointable for life, forever, unaccountable. That's a disgraceful state of affairs. So if there are questions to be answered, yes, Labour need to answer those. No, people should not be going in for life, including this individual. But, you know, Labour promised to scrap the Lords 115 years ago, and we're still waiting for them to keep that promise. Let's get rid of the Lords. That'll make things all sorts of easier, won't it?
Lastly, can I ask you about the story with which we are talking about this hour? A number of SNP colleagues of yours did sign a letter originally calling for Alaa Abdel Fattah to return to the UK. He was in prison in Egypt. In light of some tweets that have been made available, do some of your colleagues feel a bit silly for lending him their support? And should he be given citizenship? Should he have that revoked?
Wait a minute, how can you revoke somebody's citizenship? Can you revoke my citizenship? Let's a bit of nuance here, if I may. There was a campaign to have somebody released who'd been put in jail by the Egyptian authorities for pro-democracy social media posts. Now, if a UK citizen, he is a UK citizen, and we can't be stripped of that right, has broken the law or done something, and incidentally, I think it's right he's apologised, and those tweets were outrageous. They weren't right. However, the full force of the law should be applied in the same way as it applies to me or to you, Henry, or to any of your listeners. So are there different rankings of UK citizens in this set of circumstances? So these tweets were wrong, but the same rules that should apply to me and what I say should be also be applied to this individual and be applied to anybody else. So I'm not sure where citizenship comes into it.
Okay, thank you for your time. Stephen Gethins is the MP for Arbroath and Broughty Ferry for the Scottish National Party. Very quickly to John, who's in Brighton. Hello, John.
Hello. Of course there are different rankings of citizenship. There's those that are born here and those that weren't born here. Anyway, this country is a
laughing stock. Not when it comes
stock.
To citizenship, there's not. You don't get different tiers of citizenship.
He's got it through his mother. He wasn't born here, so it should...
What do you make, John, of him being welcomed to the UK?
If the country's a laughing stock, we're importing terrorist sympathisers and terrorists into this country. Is that what goes in the camping?
As far as we know with this, you're talking about Shamima Begum, but as far as we know with this particular individual, it is only these disgusting remarks that he's made on X.
Yeah, but they're extremist comments. They're clearly terrorist sympathiser. He's clearly a terrorist sympathiser. He should be kicked out of the country. He shouldn't be let in.
What do you make
of? He should be revoked.
What do you make of the fact that the government, successive governments, have been lobbying for him to be let in?
Well, obviously they've all messed up. I mean, obviously they haven't done their checks properly. I mean, it's pity because I heard his mother on being interviewed on the radio, I think on LBC, and it all sounds genuine enough, but obviously that's all gone wrong and he should be booted out. He shouldn't be let in.
Thank you very much, John, there in Brighton. More calls in a moment. 8:46 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump says a few thorny issues remain after trying to finalise a peace plan between Russia and Ukraine. The Conservatives are calling for a British-Egyptian activist to be deported after social media posts emerged where he called for Zionists to be killed. And a man believed to be carrying a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. LBC weather feeling cold across the UK this morning but staying dry for most, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. Where better news at Hither Green. The South Circular Road's all back open now in both directions. But not so good news on the A4 in Brentford. Westbound by Gillette Corner, a coach has broken down, so one lane is closed. On the trains, Chiltern Railways are running between Great Missenden and Amersham, and that's because of safety checks. South Eastern are going to and from Victoria today. That's for the engineering works. So trains are going to Charing Cross, London Bridge or Cannon Street instead. Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services aren't going to and from Liverpool Street. Some trains are diverting to Stratford instead. It also means the Weaver line can't go to and from Liverpool Street.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Find me somebody to love.
You'll love the Dream Sale. Shop now and save big with up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
the dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message Henry Reilly on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60973.
10 to 9 the time. Good morning. Henry Reilly with you here on LBC. We are talking, in fact, we're going to talk with you, Aries, in a moment about the situation in Birmingham, whereby we now have local activists deciding to protest, or saying they will protest, outside councillors' homes in order to solve the bin strike. Is it really acceptable to campaign outside or demonstrate outside politicians' homes? We'll come to your views on that in just a moment. First, though, the story with which we started the hour, featured on all of the front pages this morning, push to strip citizenship from thug held by Prime Minister. This is Ala Abdel El Fattah, the British citizen. Keir Starmer saying he was delighted that Mr. El Fattah was back in the UK, saying it's been a top priority for his government. Well, let's turn to Chris Philp, the Conservative MP, Shadow Home Secretary. Should the Prime Minister have been delighted, Mr. Philp, for him to return to the UK? Good morning.
Good morning. No, he should not emphatically have been delighted at all. This man is a scumbag. He expressed racist anti-white views. He described white people as dogs. He said he hated white people. He's expressed anti-Semitic views, calling for Jewish civilians to be murdered. He's called for Downing Street to be burned down. And he called for the British police to be attacked. This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship, and you can do that. Stephen Gettins a minute ago was completely wrong to say you can't strip citizenship. You can, where someone is a dual national, and this man is a dual national. He's got Egyptian citizenship and British citizenship, and you can strip him of his British citizenship under the 1971 Immigration Act on the grounds he's not conducive to the public good. If I was Home Secretary, I would do that today and deport him back to Egypt.
Well, what if he goes back to jail in Egypt?
Well, he's just been released from jail in Egypt and pardoned in Egypt. And to be honest, that is a matter between him and the Egyptian government. But he has just been released and pardoned by the Egyptian government.
Successive governments have just spent a lot of political capital and time campaigning for his release. So you'd be happy for him to be banged up in jail in Cairo again?
No, I wouldn't actually. But, so you can believe two things. I believe, firstly, people should not be unfairly imprisoned in places like Egypt, and it's good that the Egyptian government pardoned him and released him. That's a good thing, but that is different to letting him into this country, and we should not be allowing people into this country or allowing people to stay in this country who express racist, extremist, anti-Semitic views or support for violence. So this man should be kicked out, but so should anybody else who is not a British citizen or who is a dual national, who expresses racist, extremist, anti-Semitic or pro-violence views. We don't want those people in this country. I'm sick of it. I think the British public are sick of it. Words are no longer enough. We need to take action.
So we need to take action against people who express violent sentiments. What if someone calls for all the hotels to be set fire to and for mass deportation now? Should Lucy Connolly have her citizenship revoked?
Well, if you look at the 1971 Immigration Act, it applies to people who are either not... The measures I'm referring to refer to people who are not British citizens or to people who are dual nationals. And as far as I'm aware, Lucy Connolly does not fall into either of those two categories.
But if she were a dual national, then she would fall under your definition.
I think people who incite violence or who express racist views, anti-Semitic views...
So she would be deported under a Chris Philp Home Secretaryship if she were a dual citizen.
I think if you look at what she wrote, and by the way, I don't condone what she wrote in any way at all, but what she wrote was not the same as what this man wrote. He directly called for violence. He directly expressed racist views.
She did say set fire to the hotels for all I care.
Yeah, and that's completely wrong. She obviously shouldn't have said that. She should not have said that at all. That's completely wrong.
Can I ask, would you like to apologise to listeners for the fact that it was your government, not led by you, but back in 2021, that gave this man, Abd El Fattah, citizenship in the first place? You need to apologise, don't you?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how that came to pass or whether ministers were personally cited on that decision. In my view, it should not have been taken. All I can do is speak as the Shadow Home Secretary today, and what I would do if I were Home Secretary today is strip this man of citizenship and deport him back to Egypt.
But
his
tweets were known by that time. I mean, I take you back to 2014, Mr. Phil, when he was dropped as a nominee for a Human Rights Award. This is back in 2014, by the way, 7 years previous, for calling for the murder of Israelis.
Mm.
Are there no background checks in the Conservative government? I mean, it seems extraordinary that you... And he'd posted all of this on social media, and yet the government you were a part of gave him citizenship. It's all very well having a go at Keir Starmer. Really, it comes down to your party.
Well, frankly, he should not have been given citizenship, in my view. If you look at the Telegraph today, they say that there was an ECHR case which meant he had to be given citizenship at the time. But I think that is wrong. And that is another reason, by the way, why we should withdraw from the ECHR.
OK, so withdraw from the ECHR and this won't happen in your view? Or this is unlikely to happen?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. That's right.
Can I ask you about a few other matters, Mr. Phil? We saw a pretty crunch meeting take place in Florida yesterday between President Trump and Vladimir Zelensky at Mar-a-Lago. President Trump saying he's hopeful a deal will be reached. Mm. How concerned were you that he called President Putin beforehand?
Well, I'm very concerned about the way that Putin has exercised influence over this whole negotiation. Putin is the aggressor. Putin illegally and brutally invaded Ukraine. And I think we in the West, the UK and other Western countries, should do everything we can to support President Zelensky in his fight for freedom and Ukraine's fight for its survival. I don't think any deal should be done unless President Zelensky and the Ukrainian government are prepared to agree to it. I don't think they should be coerced in any way. In fact, any coercion should be on Russia by way of sanctions, allowing the Ukrainians to use missiles that can go into Ukraine, into Russian territory, for example. The pressure should be put on Putin. He is the aggressor. We can't let the aggressor be rewarded for their barbaric actions for two reasons. Firstly, it'll simply embolden Putin to act again in the future. Mm. And secondly, it'll embolden other aggressive dictators around the world to invade neighbouring countries if they think they're going to get away with it.
Should Ukraine cede any territory, in your view?
Well, speaking personally, no, I don't think it should, because they are the victims. They have been brutally invaded by Russia, and I personally don't think they should cede territory. I mean, if somebody invaded the United Kingdom and said, oh, we want to hang on to the Isle of Wight and Kent, I don't think we'd be very, you know, we wouldn't agree to that, obviously. Or if somebody, you know, tried to take Alaska from America, they wouldn't agree to that either. So, well, I don't think they should be forced to, okay. But it ultimately is a decision for President Zelensky, in my view.
Lastly, can I ask you about a story in today's Telegraph? You may not have seen it. It's a report from Policy Exchange. Benefits claimants' travel expenses up £750 million. Mm. The cost of benefits for patients with stress and anxiety who claim they struggle to travel has risen by £750 million since the pandemic. I mean, firstly, is that acceptable? And secondly, it's all very well talking the talk when it comes to tackling the rising benefits bill, but is it actually likely anything's going to be done when we read stories like that?
Mm. Well, the first answer is no, it's not acceptable. People claiming to have stress and anxiety and therefore demanding taxes or whatever else that's paying for is totally unacceptable. The vast majority of the British public, taxpayers, have to get around under their own steam, and shelling out an extra £750 million a year because people claim to be stressed or anxious is frankly an insult to hard-working taxpayers who are having to work hard to fund that absurd extravagance. On your second question, is anything going to be done about it? Well, I certainly know that a future Conservative government would clamp down on welfare abuse, particularly around these, frankly, nonsense claims around being stressed or anxious. We've got a plan to cut benefits by £23 billion and use some of that money, for example, to abolish stamp duty. Now, we saw Labour in government attempting some very modest reforms in June of this year, but they capitulated because their left-wing backbenchers didn't like the sound of it. And so Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves did a rapid U-turn and then put taxes up for all the rest of us as a consequence. I'm afraid to say the Labour government, currently in power and likely to be in power for another 3 or 3.5 years, are not going to fix this because their own very left-wing MPs won't let them, and Keir Starmer is too weak to stand up to them.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you for your time. Chris Philp is the Shadow Home Secretary and Conservative MP. We are going to move on. Thank you very much for all of your messages that hour. Henry Riley with you here on LBC. Coming up,
I've banned Labour MPs from my hair salon in Nottingham because the government is refusing to protect small businesses like mine. I'm Colette Osborne, and I'll be joining Henry later in the show.
But why? We'll find out. Also,
I would love to do these events more. I think more events should be mixed. I love mixed doubles. I play all the mixed doubles events. I love when it's women and men at events.
He seems to be the only one. Nick Kyrgios beating Sabalenka in the Battle of the Sexes tennis match. We'll get a full report on why on earth that went ahead. And
we are here to make massive future cuts to welfare spending.
As I was discussing with Chris Philp, the cost of benefits for patients with stress and anxiety has risen by £750 million since the pandemic.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Donald Trump claims Ukraine is a lot closer to peace after hosting its leader in Florida last night. Volodymyr Zelensky has restated his demand that any deal must respect Kiev's borders and laws. Former British ambassador to Ukraine, Lee Turner, told Henry it's important to note the relationship between the presidents has improved.
The vibes were not bad. You remember the meeting that took place in Washington last February.
Yeah, how could you forget?
When Vice President J.D. Vance and Trump ganged up on Zelensky, shouting at him. This time, at least, both sides said it went well. There was lots of smiles, shaking of hands. But there's zero sign of any breakthrough here.
A political activist who reunited with his family in the UK last week has apologised for social media posts appearing to call for violence towards Zionists. Ala Abdel Ala Abed El Fattah says his remarks, which also encouraged attacks on police officers, have been completely twisted out of their meaning. Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp told Henry Allah has no place in the UK.
He expressed racist anti-white views. He described white people as dogs. He said he hated white people. He's expressed anti-Semitic views, calling for Jewish civilians to be murdered. He's called for Downing Street to be burned down, and he called for the British police to be attacked. This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship.
Firefighters are still tackling a house blaze in Kent, which has left one child dead. An investigation into the cause of the fire in Ashford yesterday is now underway. There's a warning that flights from regional airports could get more expensive in the new year. They're facing big increases in business tax announced in the Chancellor's budget in November. Manchester Airport is thought to be one of the worst affected. And tributes are being paid to the French film icon Brigitte Bardot following her death at the age of 91. President Macron has described her as a legend of the century. LBC weather, feeling chilly across the UK this morning and staying dry for most. Sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
3 minutes past nine is the time. Good morning, you're listening to Henry Reilly with you here on LBC. Lovely to have your company. Coming up,
the only similarity is one's a boy and one's a girl, that's it. Everything else, no. I played Bobby 3 out of 5 sets. I played on a court, didn't change anything.
That was tennis legend Billie Jean King, who played Bobby Riggs in the last battle of the sexes match. That was in the 1970s. 90 million people watched that. Well, we had something similar yesterday. How did it go? We'll bring you a full report. And we've had Labour MPs banned. By the way, that's the sound of a razor if you're getting your hair cut. We've had Labour MPs banned from pubs. Now barbers and hairdressers are saying that they're no longer welcome. Is there going to be anywhere for Labour MPs to actually go?
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning. 4 minutes past nine is the time you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Now, this hour, I want to talk about something I touched on with the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, a moment or two ago. Handouts for pip claimants with anxiety, ADHD and stress have ballooned since the pandemic, so says one particular think tank, Policy Exchange, and you'll hear from someone there in just a moment. The cost of benefits for patients with stress and anxiety who claim they struggle to travel has risen by £750 million since the pandemic, so says this report. Policy Exchange has warned people with ADHD, eating, stress and anxiety disorders, they were increasingly claiming they were eligible for mobility as they struggled planning and following a journey. The number of people with stress, depressive and psychiatric conditions, I'll get there eventually, claiming mobility elements of PIP, personal independence payments, has surged since 2019. Now, the think tank found that if those with such conditions claiming mobility awards fell back to pre-pandemic levels, then it would save £750 million. The report said the criterion had become an increasingly unhelpful proxy for an extra cost in a world of navigation tools with the increasing use of apps such as Google Maps. Robert Buckland, the former Conservative cabinet minister, said that Parliament needed to stop legislating criteria for benefits in a vague and undefined way. Well, let's get more now from John Andre Prager, who is senior fellow in welfare at Policy Exchange and a former special advisor on welfare, conveniently enough, to three former prime ministers. Thank you very much for joining us, John Andre. Can I ask you, first of all, what do you put this down to, this huge increase in cost?
Court tries to make the point that the PIP legislation was introduced in 2012, and Society has rapidly changed since then, and our notions of disability has changed since 2012, but our benefit system has not kept up to pace with that change. And therefore, what we've ended up happening is a static benefit system that doesn't take into account those changes while our society has rapidly changed. And coupled with that, what we have is a piece of legislation which was poorly drafted, bluntly, with vague terminology like, can you carry out activities safely or repeatedly? And those phrases weren't given meaning, particularly by Parliament. And what happened was judges then had to interpret what those phrases meant. And they have interpreted in a way possibly that wasn't the original intent of Parliament. And that, over time, has led to the gateway of these benefits increasing. And basically, my report makes a plea, which is that Parliament needs to look at these benefits constantly and constantly reevaluate them to make sure they are in line with what we're trying to achieve today. We've had a benefit system that hasn't changed in about 15 years for the extra costs benefit in personal independence payment.
How do you know that these people who have conditions don't have compounding conditions, though, that mean that they do have a struggle, for instance, to make their lives and ability to travel diminished?
No, I think that is very possible, and I'm not saying that people who have some of these conditions don't have those needs. Absolutely. What I'm trying to point out is that there has been a massive increase, as has been widely documented over recent years, and if we were able to reverse some of that rapid increase, there would be a saving. And what I'm trying to basically do is use that example as a kind of proxy to the overall rise in these claims, and saying if you just took one element of PIP and even a subset of that element, and you took it back to not, I'm not saying remove it or anything like that, I'm saying you took it back to pre-COVID levels, that's the kind of saving that you might see. And so it's just trying to illustrate, you know, we talk about big numbers, you know, the benefit, the health and disability benefit bill is supposed to rise to £100 billion by the end of the Parliament, but I'm taking it back to a kind of a small element of that and saying, well, even if you did one thing, that's the kind of saving you would materialise. And so I'm trying to basically make the claim that, you know, one in five people now say they are disabled in this country. And that is a huge, huge increase over the last 20 or so years. And when our notions of disability have changed, our approach to disability possibly should change also.
There are more than 300,000 young people who are supported by out-of-work benefits. Why do you think that is, and what can be done to get some of them, of course I appreciate there are some who cannot work, but those who can work, to get them back into work?
I think there's been, I'm possibly going out of my lane somewhat here, but I think there's a number of issues that we've seen around, giving incentives for employers to employ young people and trying to improve that side of the coin. In terms of the benefit system, I do think the out-of-work benefit, which we're talking about here, which is the support group element of universal credit, basically incentivizes you to prove what you cannot do rather than what you can do. So we have the wrong incentives in that benefit, which basically asks you to prove that you cannot work. Indeed, you're supposed to pose your incapacity to work. So I think changing that, which to be fair to the government, they are going to do, it is the right approach. And actually, it's a mindset change about how we construct the benefit system.
Another point which your report raises is that there has been an 80% increase in taxpayer-funded translation services for benefit tribunals in the courts.
Yes, that's true. And I think I make a basic point, and I know that you'd have to have safeguards involved in this. But my overall meta-philosophical point is, I think our benefit system is part of a social contract that we have in the country to protect the most vulnerable. And as part of that social contract, I think people need to fully integrate in British society. And part of that is to learn the British language. So I think there is an argument to be made that the tribunal service itself shouldn't be providing translation services for people, But if they do need translation services, I think they should, you know, be able to pay for them themselves. And there may well be instances where we need exemptions for certain groups of people. I mean, I talk about BSL. Of course, you should have
British Sign Language, just to tell people. Yeah,
exactly. Of course, you should have BSL interpretation services for that. But I do think we need to think about our benefit system in terms of a social contract. And there's a question mark where if you cannot speak the language in this country, are you abiding by the social contract of the nation?
Thank you for your time. Very interesting. John Andre Prager is Senior Fellow in Welfare at Policy Exchange. He's behind this report and he's former Special Advisor on Welfare to three Prime Ministers. Maria is a first-time caller in Balham. Hello, Maria.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. What do you think?
I basically think that everybody's case is unique because I'm very talented and I cannot travel on transport, but I would love to be able to get onto London Transport and do what I do best, as because I'm extremely talented. But due to what's happened to me on maybe three occasions being on London Transport, it's traumatized me, and I can't get to do what I have to do. Like, for instance, you know, I'm a house chef. I can come to somebody's
house.
What,
sorry, you're a house chef, did you say?
Yeah, I'm an in-house chef. I'm a very good chef, but I have to carry my equipment to get to the, you know, to person's house.
Right.
But because of what's happened to me, and being a woman, and I'm very attractive, I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet or anything. Oh. I've been approached, and certain things have happened to me, and I feel very anxious. And I tried to apply for PIP, but because I can walk, because I can do everything else, and I can cook, and I can do all this, I was rejected. All I wanted was mobility to in progress my life, because if I can get to the other end, I can try and make my life better.
But Marie, it's the reason you don't travel on public transport is you've had a bad experience with, what, men being predatory?
Yeah, I've had exposure, I've had people exposed, I've had been followed, I've had someone say they're going to, you know, basically put some...
I know where that's going, but yeah, I see what you mean.
You know what I mean. I've had quite a lot of trauma. But what I'm saying to you, I've had to buy a car now, don't get me wrong, and I was rejected, Pip, and I've had to put myself into debt to buy a car, and it's just making my life more harder when I could have actually been progressing in a different way. And I paid I used to have 17 people working for me many years ago. Yeah. And I paid all my taxes. I paid my VAT. I did all of that. And today, like the doctors that earlier on that said, you know, he felt like he was working throughout the pandemic. Yeah. He gave his life to the NHS. I did all that. I'm not saying that, you know, I believe that there's often people that
are trying. So you think it should be more generous to get PIP? More people should be eligible?
No, I think people should be, it should be individual looks, needs. It should be properly, just because somebody can walk doesn't mean that their mental capacity is okay to get on the bus or public transport, because that's the way they look at it. If you can walk, you can do whatever you can. If you can cook, you're good. But there's other underlying issues which they should actually, like, everybody should be, you know, like radar. They should do individual people for individual needs, because some people are going to try and get PIP and they're not eligible.
Of course.
They're not, I feel like they're trying to jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah,
but people like me that look normal, that can do normal things, doesn't necessarily mean that my mental capacity can be around inside London. I've had so much things happen to me, and I just feel like I just wish I nearly basically I got so depressed that I thought my life. When they rejected my PIP, I thought, oh, God, what am I going to do, blah, blah, blah. But then I decided, well, you know what, I'm not going to let this, you know, this situation bring me down, because I am talented. So I've ended up putting myself into a lot of debt, which now I'm struggling to pay for. But it's okay. But I'm just saying that everybody is unique. Just because someone can walk, because someone can think, they should really look at persons. Like, go deep into the history of what happened to someone.
I agree. The problem is, I mean, everyone is unique, aren't they? I'm not quite sure we could expand the DWP to make sure everyone gets... I mean, everyone does already get a sort of... an individual assessment, don't they? Quite how you could make that more individual, I don't know, beyond doing the whole thing. And I'm terribly sorry what has happened to you with regards to what's happened on public transport. That is beyond awful and that shouldn't happen. But we can't end up in a situation where, as you put it, attractive people have to get Ubers everywhere. I mean, surely there's a better way in order to... I mean, it's like a sort of sledgehammer to crack a nut, isn't it? I mean, we can't just pay for cabs and for transport everywhere and for cars because people don't feel like they can get on public transport. I mean, surely the issue should be addressing what happens on public transport, isn't it? Or am I going mad? Your call's in a moment on the headline figure that the travel expenses from benefit claimants are up £750 million. If you're on that element of PIP and you do claim it in terms of your travel, why is that? Because look, the Policy Exchange think tank clearly has one view. I'd very much like to hear your view, if you'd like to counter any of what they have said, or more broadly, your thoughts on this huge amount of money since the pandemic, £750 million since pre-pandemic, for claimants with anxiety, ADHD and stress using for travel expenses. Is that something you do? Tell me why, for those who don't understand, why is that so necessary? Your calls in a moment. Also,
for business rates, I will introduce permanently lower tax rates, the lowest rates since 1991.
Well, not everyone's happy. Pubs have banned Labour MPs, and now hairdressers and barbers have started banning Labour MPs. We'll speak with one of those hairdressers in just a moment. First, though, 9:17 the time, the news headlines with Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump says Ukraine is a lot closer to peace after hosting its leader in Florida last night. A political activist has apologised for his social media posts, appearing to call for violence towards Zionists. And emergency services are still tackling a house fire in Kent, which has left one child dead. LBC weather feeling cold across the UK this morning and staying dry for most, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Ware. Better news on the A4 westbound at Brentford. All the lanes are back open now. That coach, which broke down earlier, has now been recovered. Very busy on the A2 Shooters Hill Road westbound, heading from Blackheath Common up to Deptford Bridge. On the trains, Chiltern Railways remain suspended between Great Missenden and Amersham. That's because of the safety checks. No southeastern trains at Victoria again today because of the engineering works. So trains are being diverted to and from Charing Cross, London Bridge and Cannon Street instead. Also on the trains, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services aren't going to and from Liverpool Street again today, also for engineering works, and the Weaver line also is suspended to and from the station.
This is LBC.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Day out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice move, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
LBC.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh, my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash... You must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
Find me somebody to love.
You'll love the Dream Sale. Shop now and save big with up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
The Hilton Sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
with a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Story in the Telegraph today. The travel expenses of benefits claimants is up by £750 million. The paper says handouts for PIP claimants with anxiety, ADHD and stress have ballooned since the pandemic, risen by £750 million. The Policy Exchange think tank said people with eating disorders, stress, anxiety and ADHD were increasingly claiming that they were eligible for mobility as they struggled planning and following a journey. But the argument against that is that in a world of navigation tools like Google Maps, do you need to have the same level of support? We'll come to your views on that in a moment. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Ed says, between 92 and 96, I used to get a bus at 5:15 a.m. to leave at 6, catch a bus, a tube, an overground train and another bus to get me into work at 8 a.m. So I was commuting 4 hours a day for 4 years. I was born with epilepsy and I've never claimed a penny. There are too many skivers in this country, so says Ed. And this from, I don't give a name, but I'm going to read it nonetheless. It says, psychologist here, the best thing we can do for anxiety is exposure therapy. Avoiding public transport perpetuates the issue massively. We need to stop enabling people to avoid life. Best treatment for depression is exercise and routine. So getting a job out of the house is ideal. Sophie is in Woodford Green. Hello, Sophie.
Oh, hello. It's Stacey here from Woodford Green.
Stacey, I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Can we pretend that didn't happen? Hello, Stacey.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. What would you like to tell me?
I was just listening to you guys speak about public transport and how, basically, I've applied for PIP and I've been refused twice now from the appeals. And,
when did you apply, could I ask?
Yeah, I applied in March. I have bowel disease. I work full-time, I've got three children, I have bowel disease, so I use public transport quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I had an accident on public transport with, if you know anything about ulcerated colitis or Crohn's, you can't hold your toilet and you bleed quite a lot. It's a very... So I actually had an accident on the bus and they had to shut down the bus and call an ambulance. Police come, another bus driver come. And since that incident has happened, I've been quite anxious to go out in public.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And use public transport. Because I've decided to get a licence and use a car more often than public transport, I've been denied and said that I'm fit, which I'm not. I suffer from, like, mobility issues. I have a low immune system. I catch every cold going.
What mobility issues is that then that you is that linked to bowel disease?
Yes. So what it is it affects all your bones, and so you constantly are in pain. And because of the medication that I'm on, I can't take any pain relief because it makes the bowel worse.
I don't know the answer here, Stacey. I'm only speculating, so please do shut me down if I'm wrong. But I often have a family member who has Crohn's disease, for example, and the idea is sometimes actually on public transport, at least you can sort of, I don't know how to phrase this, get off quickly in some cases, as opposed to driving. You've got to park up and then, I mean, it's probably a nightmare getting a blue badge as well. Or is that just not your...
I haven't even applied for that.
Right.
So the issue of that is that I know this is going to sound really repulsive, so I do apologise to anybody listening.
Okay.
But if I'm going to have an accident on the bus or off of the bus, I'm in the middle of nowhere. But if I have it in the car, then at least I can drive myself home and not be embarrassed.
Yes, so that is true.
That.
Yeah. Okay. And so you feel, understandably, that you should be entitled to PIP in order to get around more easily, do you?
Yeah.
I say more easily, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and even when you said that, I just heard you say that it's individually based and somebody does the evaluation. I've had a phone call. That's what I had, was a phone call. And two phone calls I had, and they can't really see. On the outside, I look like I'm fine. And, you know, as I said, I work, I've got three children.
Yeah.
But on the inside, I'm constantly suffering, and that's what they can't see.
Quite, and as we often hear, not all disabilities are visible, which is very true in your case as well. Stacey, thank you so much for calling in Woodford Green. Appreciated. More calls in a moment. 0345 606 0973 is the number to call to have your say. If you have an individual sort of story like Stacey, I'd very much like to hear on. I mean, if you do get PIP and the mobility element of it, why is that? Why did you claim it? What do you, why did you need it, really, I suppose, is what I'm asking. I'm not asking that in any sort of derogatory way. I'm just curious to find out more. 0345 606 0973, 9:26 is the time. Now, do you remember, it was just a few weeks ago that we were hearing that pubs were starting to ban Labour MPs. Probably the most famous example was obviously Jeremy Clarkson, who said that Labour MPs, I think except from one who abstained on a farming bill, were no longer welcome in their pubs. Well, now you might see Labour MPs with long hair, because Labour MPs have got the chop from hairdressers over the great rates betrayal. Hairdressers are following in the footsteps of publicans by banning Labour MPs over what they call are the government's business rates betrayal. Colette Osborne joins me, hairdresser, who has banned Labour MPs from her salon, and she joins me now. Why have you done that, Colette? Good morning.
Good morning, Henry, and thank you for having us on here today. Why have I done that? Because we've been talking to government for over 5 years, warning them what's coming, with employment collapsing in our sector. And they have their fingers in their ears. So the only way to make them actually take notice of is to say, sorry, no cut, you can't have a cut in our salon. We just, if they're going to disregard us and cut us out of business meetings and cut us out of their industrial strategy, then we have no option but to cut them from salons.
I read that the, because you're quoted in the Mail on Sunday, Ms Osborne, whose local Labour MPs are Juliet Campbell and Michael Payne, have either of them been in touch with you?
Michael Payne's been very proactive and been in touch. Juliet Campbell doesn't even answer an email. No. Michael's tried his best, but we get nowhere, absolutely nowhere. And the reason, if I can just go through this, Henry.
Yeah, because I was going to say, your business rates bill is going up by more than five figures, I read. So why is that?
It is. And do you know what? Just with regards to, because the business rate, obviously, is for many salons the final nail in the coffin, just like it is for hospitality. We've had huge increases since COVID. We've had, for instance, apprenticeship wages have gone up 93%, which means that we've lost pretty much 70% of apprentices in the industry. We did a CBI report and we forecast to have no new apprentices by 2027. My increase in business rates will mean that it will be an apprentice gone. So, you know, we have to make the choice between employing people or actually paying our business rates. Which is really difficult, because all we're trying to do is save jobs. Then if you look at the kind of our two-tier tax system that we have in our sector, which is why we're so unique. I don't think we have any other sector that has this. It's just us. So we can have two salons operating next door to each other. One's an employer, and there's only 3 in 10 salons that now operate employed models. The rest of the industry has been forced, due to tax increases, to go and actually relabel employees, self-employed, to avoid VAT and all the taxes. So the employed salon will pay £110,000 on a £400,000 turnover, and the salon next door that operates and looks identical will pay £47,000. That's over 2 times the tax. So we've got a massive disparity already in our sector. Government are aware of this. They're aware that employment is crashing. We lost 20%, well, 20% of employees fell from ONS data in January to March 2025. We also have the situation where we did the Business and Trade Committee. Leon Byrne is the only MP, and I will call out to him
as
well.
And he's chair of the Business Committee, just to remind listeners.
Absolutely. Yep. And he's the only person that seems to have actually, the light bulb seems to have gone on. This actual disparity has cost the Treasury £2.4 billion in VAT receipts alone. And it's scandalous that we're actually put in this position. This is why business rates is so important, because, to be quite frank, Henry, nobody can afford these increases. We can't even afford the increase of national minimum wage. It's basically pushing more employers to be forced to go down the rent-a-chair model, relabel all their employees self-employed, give them insecure work. And this is a Labour government, Henry.
Yeah.
A Labour government that's supposed to, their pledge was to make work pay. It doesn't pay, clearly.
Well, you've raised it, and let's hope that Labour MPs are listening. What would you say, though, Colette, to people who say, look, there's nothing better than having a good chat when you're having your hair cut. Surely if you were cutting Juliet Campbell's hair, you could have a nice, you could have a nice chat about it, her or any other Labour MP, rather than banning them.
We've tried that, Henry. We've
really?
Yeah, we have. We have. We've actually had a hairdresser tell the Chancellor in the chair what's happening. I've met the Chancellor myself. And if I say this, the Chancellor made me lots of promises pre-election, didn't come through on any of them. And if any Labour MPs are listening, I would say to them, you made certain pledges pre-election. You said you were going to make work pay. You gave pledges to small businesses. Item 12, you said that you were going to level the playing field so that basically employers couldn't be undercut by illegal businesses. You're allowing that to happen. We've had 100,000 go missing. We've got a huge hidden economy. And frankly, you're not listening. And to be really frank, Henry, the only way that we seem to get Labour to listen is when the amazing, our amazing media partners get involved. So, you know, I'm calling directly now, directly to Leon Byrne, James Murray, Rachel Reeves, and Dan Tomlinson. We need you in a room. We have solutions to save employment in our sector, along with apprentices. How can we have it that we've lost 70% of apprentices and yet we're actually excluded from industrial strategy? So the business rates is just the final nail in the coffin, and those business rate costs will cost jobs.
Yeah.
Jobs that Labour said they're protecting, they're not.
Thank you very much for your time, Colette. Colette Osborne is a hairdresser who has banned Labour. Let's, their Haven salons in Nottinghamshire. Two salons there. Colette Osborne has banned Labour MPs from her salon. More calls in a moment. You might have views on that, but also back to benefits. Next, 9:32 the time. The news is with Lottie Morley.
The Conservatives are calling for a British Egyptian activist to be deported after old social media posts emerged where he called for Zionists to be killed. Alaa Abed El Fattah has apologised for his comments and said they've been completely twisted. Donald Trump says Ukraine is a lot closer to peace after hosting its leader in Florida last night. Volodymyr Zelensky says any deal must respect Kiev's borders and laws. And a man believed to be holding a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. Emergency services were called out to a collision on the A11 in Thetford last night. LBC weather, feeling chilly across the UK this morning and staying dry for most, a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
9:35, the time. A very good morning to you. Henry Riley here on LBC. We are talking about the £750 million rise, uplift, call it what you want, in the cost of benefits for patients with stress or anxiety who are travelling in order to, well, just get to work or to get about. Diane is in Coleraine in Northern Ireland. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Henry.
Hi.
Merry Christmas to you. I don't think I wish you that. Yes.
No, we can still do that. We're into the 12 days of Christmas now, aren't we? It's not New Year
yet.
Yeah,
we are, yes. I do think that the discussion around anxiety and benefits, it really disappoints me by the government. I mean, after all, the government told us about staying inside and all of that. And for people with anxiety, real anxiety, they know how frightening an experience it can be. It's also linked to other conditions, Henry, like autism. Maybe you have a physical disability like asthma. You've took really bad asthma attacks.
Yeah.
It can be linked to so many things. And I don't think people really understand anxiety. They seem to beat down on people with anxiety an awful lot.
Okay. Well, so you think the approach and the way we talk about it is all wrong?
I do, Henry, because anxiety can be as debilitating as a physical illness in my experience.
No, absolutely. But Diane, what I would say is, I mean, we are on course to hit £100 billion, the total bill for health and disability, by 2030. I mean, it would seem to me that that is unsustainable.
Yeah, but it has not all escalated since the pandemic, you know. And you must understand that in the pandemic, a lot of people have gone through so much trauma and things like that. And, you know, whenever you go through these PIP processes, I've been through them, and they're awful, Henry. They couldn't be worse. So how these people are getting it if they are not genuine is beyond me, because I'm genuine and I have struggled to get it, you know. So I would say the escalation is because of the pandemic and because of all of the things that happened to people in the pandemic. There'll also be people with autism and ADHD, which anxiety is part of that condition, where they're trying to go on journeys and it's difficult for them. So there'll be so many things. And you'll always have people on here downtrodding people on benefits. All the time it happens on LBC, I have to say that. It's very upsetting.
Well, I think we're trying to have a conversation about it, Diane. Well, I don't think it's demonising, because I agree with you. Anxiety can be...
I think LBC over-egged the pudding. It's never off the airwaves.
Well, respectfully, Diane, we haven't put the report out. It's been put out by Policy Exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's your government, and all linked to your government. But your government told you in the pandemic not to go out. Your government told you all of these things. And for a person who's stressed and anxious, that will have a lasting effect, just like children in school.
Any nice plans for New Year, Diane?
Oh,
you out New Year's Eve partying?
To talk to you, Henry.
You're out partying, I can tell. You just don't want to say it on the air.
I'm a partier. No.
Yeah, you are.
I'm not a partier. I'm too unwell to be partying too much. But I've had a nice Christmas.
Good.
I really have.
Good. So. Pleased to hear it. Thank you, Diane. Appreciated. Diane there in Coleraine in Northern Ireland. More calls on that in a moment. 0345 6060973, the number to call. First, though...
It's Nick Kyrgios that secures victory in the Battle of the Sexes here in Dubai.
Yes, Battle of the Sexes. It was billed as a box office entertainment designed to reach new audiences. In the end, we had Sabalenka and Nick Kyrgios's highly anticipated Battle of the Sexes boiled down to a brand-building exercise, which took pride of place on the BBC's primetime Sunday afternoon schedule. So says a piece in the Daily Telegraph. They argue, or indeed the author, Fiona Thomas, there was zero logic in pitting these two together with modified rules. What was the point of it all? Both players only had one serve, a tweak which heavily favoured the big-hitting Kyrgios, and completely threw Sabalenka, who had no reply to the copious amounts of spin the Australian applied. Now, Sabalenka is first. Kyrgios is 671st, although I don't think he's played much in the last sort of 3 years or so. The last battle of the sexes, by the way, between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, saw 90 million people around the world tune in back in September of 1973. Let's talk about this more with, I'll get there eventually, Stephanie Hilborn, who is Chief Executive of Women in Sport and joins me on the line now. Was it all a bit pointless, a bit of a damn squib, do you think, Stephanie? Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, great to be here. Yeah, I mean, the comparison to the 1973 moment is just not there in our view. We're a charity that actually came along 10 years after Billie Jean King's own charity in the States was founded. All about, you know, why does sport matter for women and girls? Let's make it equal. And she was the greatest champion of equal prize money, equality in sport, gender equality in sport. She was a, you know, complete hero. And, the, you know, back in that day, you know, this 55-year-old Bobby Riggs was saying he could still thrash her on the court. It had a real symbolism and a real meaning. And this felt a bit much more gimmicky and really more seriously unfortunate in potentially playing into this message, I'm afraid, that young boys still get, that what matters is beating the girls at sport. That's not a sort of healthy, that's not a healthy kind of message that they should be getting. So, yeah, it sort of felt all very uncomfortable for us and missing the point, the value of sport, you know, the real value about testing on limits and, you know, the skill and the resilience and the fair competition.
It was a bit of a sort of spectator event. I read Peter Crouch turned up with Ronaldo to watch this event, which took place in Dubai. Do you think it should happen again? I mean, is this something we should see more common, Stephanie?
No. I mean, I would not be championing that. I mean, I think the real these people are dedicating their lives to sport, these professional players, and it should be taken seriously. And, you know, we'd like to see actually more mixed tennis taken seriously. And, you know, we just want to see anything that can fuel a much more powerful narrative about, you know, women can reach the top of their game. But look, let's be honest, we're 40 or 50%, you know, less strong in our upper body. We're just substantially smaller animals. And we can test our limits. We can be brilliant at teamwork. We can be brilliant with our skill. And that can be amazing to watch. But pitting men against women in a competitive sport like that, you know, we're not fans of that.
Even given the fact that the court on Sabalenka's side was 9% smaller, I read, in order to cope with a sort of speed difference.
Yeah, I mean, all the differences are so massive, you know, that if you think of just 6 inches of height difference in, you know, the average 5.5 inches, 6 average man, think what that means for wingspan, think of that extra strength I talked about, think of the fact that the same weight man versus woman has like 1.5 bigger heart and lung capacity. There's so much going on there. It's so complex that, and I mean, I know they must have tried to kind of counter that. And clearly it had some impact, but, you know, it's not necessarily going to work. And what's the purpose of it? You know, why do it? I mean, you're saying it's to reach a new audience, but surely there are ways to be bringing, you know, people in without having to resort to that.
I tend to agree with you. I was quoting the Telegraph there, but great to have you on. Thank you. Stephanie Hilborn is Chief Executive of Women in Sport. Did you watch that yesterday? I didn't watch it live. I've seen some of the, well, I call them highlights. It didn't look particularly entertaining. It seems like an awful lot of money was involved. And as I say, it was bizarre. The only things I saw online, really, that at one point Peter Crouch arrived with Brazilian footballing great Ronaldo into the Coca-Cola Arena. They were late arrivals. And the court obviously looked slightly bizarre, being 9% smaller. And they all did pretty well out of it financially, I read as well. I haven't got the exact figure, but it's speculated that it runs into the millions of pounds, which I'm not entirely surprised by. Might take your calls on that if you watched it and you have a view. 0345 60 60 973. But it's back to the subject with which we started the hour. Benefits, claimants and the travel expenses up by £750 million. Your views on that next. You're listening to Henry Riley here on LBC. The time is 9:45. The news is with Lottie Morley.
There are calls for a British Egyptian activist to be deported after old social media posts emerged where he called for Zionists to be killed. Donald Trump says Ukraine and Russia are a lot closer to peace after hosting Vladimir Zelensky in Florida last night. And a man believed to be holding a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. LBC weather, a cold start across the UK this morning and staying dry for most with a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the A4 at Brentford, the traffic lights aren't working at Boston Manor Road. This is a very busy junction, so do take extra care. On the train, so many problems. Firstly, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services. They can't go to and from Liverpool Street. Some of the trains are going to Stratford instead. And also, London Overground's Weaver line can't go to and from Liverpool Street. Those trains are starting and stopping at London Fields. Chiltern Railways aren't going to and from Great Missenden and Amersham because of the safety checks. And southeastern trains are suspended at Victoria. This is also for engineering work. So trains are going to Charing Cross, London Bridge or Cannon Street instead.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Ian Dale.
At 12, have you ever modified your accent to get on in life? At 11, does Putin really want Ukraine to succeed? But first, should we withdraw Ala Abd El Fattah's British citizenship?
Ian Dale at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. Top up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with
T-R-I-P. Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until 12th of January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation with Henry Riley. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
9.48 is the time, Ian Dale with you at 10. Daniel's in Golders Green first, though, and you want to talk about that hairdresser we had on, Colette.
Yes, good morning, Henry.
Morning.
Morning. Happy New Year to you, sir.
And to you, and happy Christmas.
Thank you, and to you. Henry, I have so much love and support for that hairdresser, Colette, because I believe that this Labour government, who said that they weren't going to raise taxes on working people and who said that they were going to put government back into the service of working people, have ruthlessly betrayed the more than 5.6 million small businesses that we have in this country.
Yes, and so, but is banning them really the right way to go about it, to address it?
Yes, I genuinely believe it is, Henry, because taking this form of direct action by banning any Labour MP who supports this appalling potential rise in business rates, which will be crippling to millions of small businesses, is the only way for them to understand and listen that they are causing such carnage, such terror and such bewilderment amongst our business community in this country. And it is... Henry, it is so short-sighted because for every business that goes bust as a result of this crippling business rates increase, the government doesn't get any VAT, it doesn't get any corporation tax, it doesn't get any national insurance, it doesn't get any other taxes. It's insanity. Henry, you're a clever fellow. Why is there no one... Henry, why is there no one in the Treasury who has access to every single data point in this country? Why is there no one in the Treasury saying, oh, hang on a minute, if we put business rates up by 45, 55, 65% and businesses go bust, we're not going to... we're going to lose jobs, unemployment's going to go up, we're not going to get corporation tax, we're not going to get VAT. Why is there no one saying this? I can't understand it.
I know. I agree with you. Does it make a difference? Do you think it cuts through these sorts of campaigns? Like, I mean, for instance, I doubt many Labour MPs were queuing to get to Jeremy Clarkson's pub, for example. Whether Colette has many Labour MPs, although she has met Rachel Reeves, but whether she has many going through her door every day. The symbolism of the gesture, does it matter, do you think? Does it work?
Yes, it does, Henry, because you're quite right. I think if one or two small businesses do it, if an odd pub here does it and an odd hairdresser there does it, it probably won't. But the fact is, this is now gaining momentum. And I believe that this is now becoming a national campaign where we are seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of pubs, hair salons, small businesses, bars, restaurants, cafes, putting those stickers in their windows saying, Labour MPs not welcome. And I think this is now cutting through. And like when workers get affected and they have strikes and they picket and you have very visible forms of direct action and direct protest, people pay attention and government changes. And we saw it with the farmers when they had to do the U-turn on the inheritance tax.
Yeah.
The government on farms.
So sneaked out around Christmas.
Indeed. They snuck it out after Parliament closed, didn't they? But Henry, I genuinely think they do. And look, we are a nation of small businesses. And what the government, this Labour government, is doing to them is heartbreaking. I know you do in Putney and Fulham and Hammersmith and your neck of the woods. You try to support your local businesses, your local cinemas, yes. Your local, shops. I try and do it here in North London. I love supporting my local bars, my local dry cleaners, my local hairdressers. Henry, we love supporting our small businesses, and what this government is doing to them is heartbreaking, and it has to stop.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone.
You don't know exactly that.
Thank you very much, Daniel. It's always nice to hear from you. Daniel there in Golders Green. On the subject of the football match, sorry, I'm thinking elsewhere. The subject of the tennis match, I should say. Peter says, I was at the match in Dubai. Pretty flat atmosphere, actually. Half the crowd seemed to be more interested in self-promotion and showing off than what is happening in the court. I walked away thinking, what was that about? Two people making mega pounds. How much did you pay for a ticket, Peter? I want to know how much you paid. Caroline says, male and female physiology is very different. Everyone knows this, which is why we have separate categories for the sexes in sport. So not sure what the point was. Of course the man would beat the woman. So says Caroline. Martin's in Mickle Trafford. Hello, Martin.
Morning, are you okay?
Morning. You want to talk about Pip?
I do, if that's okay.
Please.
To cut a long story short, I won't say too much. I was on the DLA, then I got transitioned onto Pip. Had the lovely Pip interviews and things with people trying to diagnose me with things that weren't wrong with me just by looking at a list of medication and using Google. What I wanted to say was, I was listening to your last caller, the lady in Ireland, and she was on about COVID and things like that being responsible for anxiety and stuff.
Yeah.
I've got a slightly different take on why the claims have gone through the roof.
Okay.
During COVID, they stopped the assessments, obviously the face-to-face assessments, where you had to sit in front of a nurse or someone and explain what was wrong, and they could physically look you up and down to see how you were reacting. Well, that all stopped. So basically, anyone who could get a PIP form and fill it in and send it off, you were applied. No need to go and see anybody. No need for someone to look you over to test you, to ask you to stand on one leg.
So what's changed now?
Well, they're still trying to get through the, as far as I know, through the assessments. They had to pause the assessments. So that caused years of a backlog for people wanting to be assessed to claim PIP. So as far as I can work out, what they've done is I'm on what they call a 10-year ongoing award, a light touch award, because the things that are wrong with me won't get better. But what I think they've done is these people with anxiety, so they've given like a year to 2 years at the most, hoping that we can get them in to assess them. And then that's where the fun starts, where these people with real problems get told no, and everybody gets told no. To cut a long story short, but... Yeah. But that's basically what I think the problem is. They stopped the assessments that everybody hates, quite rightly. But that's why people have been getting through the net, I think, because you can't err on the side of caution and say, well, I don't think they really need that. And then 3 days later in the newspapers, it comes out that they really did need it and they've caused some kind of chaos on a bus somewhere or something. But that generally is the problem with COVID. Not only has it made people anxious, but it's stopped the system from working the way that it was supposed to work.
It's blamed for absolutely everything now, isn't it? People just blame COVID for everything, which, and there is some truth in that, of course. For instance, you know, NHS waiting lists or whatnot. But we can't just go around blaming it forever and saying, oh, we'll never recover because COVID happened. At the end of the day, it was a global pandemic. We've got to get to grips with the fact that it happened and we need to sort of right the wrongs.
Yeah. Well, these people will all start to be assessed now. And the thing that I really can't work out is there are two levels to the mobility, the lower and the higher.
Yeah.
It's only the higher award that you get the car for. So I can't quite understand how this 20, 30 quid is a for people to get taxis to every shop because they can't possibly walk there, they can't get a bus there. I mean, I get the highest rate, but I use a bus. I don't take the car. It's...
I know. I know that's not your experience. That's not everyone's experience. But I mean, the report says in some cases it is happening. Whether that is the experience of you, clearly not. Thank you, Martin. On the subject of the tennis match, by the way, Peter says the ticket was £90. Sam's in Brighton. Back to Pip. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Henry. Hello.
What would you like to tell me?
Well, firstly, not sure where the last caller is getting his information from. He's obviously on Pip, but. Assessments didn't stop during lockdown. I applied for PIP in 2020.
Yeah.
And I was assessed by a nurse, and then I was turned down, and I ended up going to a tribunal for which I was assessed for during 2021 when it was lockdown. So it just happened online. It didn't happen face-to-face.
Okay.
I think in terms of politicians' rhetoric around all of this, it's absolutely shocking. I'll just give you, if I may, a brief outline of my own circumstances. So I work full-time. I worked at the university for 22 years. I'm educated to master's level. But in 2008, I was informed that the father of my children was on the sex offenders register for raping, tying up and gagging a 14-year-old girl. He then attacked me with a knife and tried to break my neck. Goodness. He then stalked me for 4 years. I had to fight the system over and over and over again. I then campaigned to change the law for stalking. I gave evidence in Parliament. I worked with politicians. And to hear people, and it's left and right politicians or who are saying that people with a little bit of anxiety and, you know, it's just minimises everything. And I find it absolutely appalling. You know, I ended up having to, because I set up two charities to help victims of stalking, and I ended up having to give all of that up in 2020.
Right.
Due to my own complex post-traumatic stress disorder from being hunted down for 4 years and having to battle the system as well. And then I'm up against having to battle another system. I also have a daughter who is autistic with ADHD. We were made homeless in 2020 and again in 2022. Mm. I submitted the restraining order that prevents him from coming into Brighton and Hove. They ignored that. They wanted us to move to New Haven, where he lives.
Well, and that situation that you've described, Sam, sounds absolutely appalling. We haven't got enough time, sadly, to go into it fully, but that, I mean, you really have battled the system in order to get through there. So, you know, credit to you in pretty horrific circumstances. Thank you very much for calling in. You have the last word. That's it from me. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player or the brand new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all of the latest news and opinions, pause, rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. That's the all-new official LBC app. Download it for free from your app store now. At one on LBC, it's Sheila Fogarty, but right now it's time for Ian Dale.
Thank you very much, Henry. First up, when should someone lose their British citizenship? That's a question the government is going to have to answer after Alaa Abd El Fattah's release from an Egyptian prison was hailed by the Prime Minister, who said how delighted he was to welcome him back to Britain. And then we discovered all the disgusting things he'd said on social media. It's Fattah, not the Prime Minister. Do these views, for which he's now apologised, mean he deserves to forfeit the privilege of being a British citizen? Is this another heart versus head issue? At 11, according to President Trump, Putin wants to see Ukraine succeed, which is presumably why he's bombing the bejesus out of it. And at 12, does having a posh accent help you get on in life? And do you ever modify your accent?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a British-Egyptian political activist has apologised for social media posts appearing to call for violence towards Zionists. Ala Abed El Fattah says his remarks have been completely twisted out of their meaning. Jemima Steinfeld from the Index on Censorship told LBC she condemns his social media statements.
In jail in Egypt. He was in jail for peaceful protests, for doing things like, I mean, the latest one for 5 years was because he reposted about torture in Egyptian prisons. El-Sisi is an authoritarian. He has been escalating his attacks, and that is why Ala was in jail, and that is what we campaign against. We don't campaign for perfect people. If we were to campaign for perfect people, we wouldn't be campaigning for very many.
The Conservatives are calling for him to be deported and to have his citizenship revoked. Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky say they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine. Elena Halushka from the International Center for Ukrainian Victory told LBC there are some serious sticking points, though.
I haven't heard anything clear. One thing that is really missing, there will be no effective peace process. And that's pressure on Russia. Because if the talks aren't resolving the underlying problem, Russia's desire to restore their empire, then there won't be peace. And we do not see any wish of the President Trump to put even minimal pressure on Russia.
The US president will also host Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu later. A man has been charged with murder following the death of a pensioner in North Wales. The 68-year-old died on Christmas Day after being found in a property on the High Street in St Asaph. Forecasters say we should prepare for a bracing start to the new year. Two amber health alerts have already been issued, covering the northeast and northwest of England. Temperatures are expected to fall to around -4, with some snow predicted in the northwest later this week. And cricket's governing body has described the pitch in the fourth Ashes test as unsatisfactory. The ICC says it favoured the bowlers too much, with the match in Melbourne finishing within 2 days. England won, but remain 3-1 down to Australia in the five-test series. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most, with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
At Tesco Mobile, prices are frozen, but our deals will keep you feeling nice and cosy. Get our unlimited data sim for just £24 a month with club card prices, saving you £72. Plus, you'll get a £40 Tesco gift card too. And that price is frozen for the duration of your contract, thanks to club card prices. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 1st of February. Club card and 12-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past 10 on LBC. It's Ian Dale in for James O'Brien all week this week, so I'll be with you until Friday. Sorry about that if you're going to be missing James. I know he's got a very loyal band of listeners, and quite right too. But Joe says, what a treat to hear me at this time of day. Well, takes all sorts, Joe. Thank you very much. Right, I want to start off today by talking about, I think, a really quite important news story, because on LBC over the last few years, we've carried interviews with the mother and with the sister of a man called Ala Abd El Fattah, who was imprisoned in Egypt for 10 years. He's a dual citizen, British-Egyptian dual citizen. And ostensibly, I mean, he was being held under trumped-up charges, and the British government, successive British governments, kept lobbying the Egyptian government to release him. I remember hearing an interview which Andrew Marr did with his mother. I then remember interviewing his sister myself. Really heart-rending. I mean, really. And I mean, if you'd said to me at that point, or said to Andrew, and I think James probably interviewed one of them as well, if you'd said to us, did this man deserve to be released, we'd all said unequivocally, absolutely. Trumped up charges, it is outrageous that this man, a dual citizen, British citizen, is being kept in jail in Egypt. And I would still stick to that. I mean, I think the charges against him were trumped up. Anyway, he was released and he was sent back to Britain, I think on Christmas Eve. Now, the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary all issued tweets welcoming him back. The Prime Minister said how delighted he was to see him coming back to Britain. And then a whole series of tweets were uncovered that he had issued back in 2010, 2011 and 2012, which were, frankly, outrageous and disgusting. I mean, here's one. He says, yes, I consider killing any colonialists, and especially Zionists, heroic. We need to kill more of them. And so it went on. There are plenty of other similar ones. And you think, well, how is it that the Prime Minister of this country and the Foreign Secretary and the Deputy Prime Minister weren't made aware of this? How was it that Priti Patel, as Home Secretary, gave this man citizenship in 2019? I mean, it beggars belief that no one actually went into his social media history. He'd even written a book where he talked about some of the things that he'd said. Now, he's issued an apology subsequently. I mean, I've got it here. This was released earlier today. He says, I am shaken that just as I'm being reunited with my family for the first time in 12 years, several historic tweets of mine have been republished and used to question and attack my integrity and values, escalating to calls for the revocation of my citizenship. Looking at the tweets now, the ones that were not completely twisted out of their meaning, I do understand how shocking and hurtful they are, and for that I unequivocally apologise. They were mostly expressions of a young man's anger and frustrations in a time of regional crises, the wars on Iraq, on Lebanon and Gaza, and the rise of police brutality against Egyptian youth. Well, okay, up to a point, mate. I don't know how sincere that apology was. But there, of course, there are now calls for him, his citizenship to be revoked. Now, it was granted apparently partly because of the European Convention on Human Rights, which the British laws changed their interpretation of it in 2018. So they didn't have this clause where somebody has to be of good character to get British citizenship, unbelievably. So that wasn't part of the decision to give him citizenship. Now, I don't know whether this went up to ministers in the Home Office at the time. Priti Patel was the Home Secretary. But obviously, given recent events, you'd like to think that that couldn't happen nowadays, but I think it probably could. Well, the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, was speaking to my colleague Henry Riley this morning on LBC.
This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship, and you can do that. Your Stephen Gethin's a minute ago was completely wrong to say you can't strip citizenship. You can, where someone is a dual national, and this man is a dual national. He's got Egyptian citizenship and British citizenship, and you can strip him of his British citizenship under the 1971 Immigration Act on the grounds he's not conducive to the public good. If I was Home Secretary, I would do that today and deport him back to Egypt. I believe, firstly, people should not be unfairly imprisoned in places like Egypt, and it's good that the Egyptian government pardoned him and released him. That's a good thing, but that is different to letting him into this country, and we should not be allowing people into this country or allowing people to stay in this country who express racist, extremist, anti-Semitic views or support for violence. So this man should be kicked out, but so should anybody else who is not a British citizen or who is a dual national, who expresses racist, extremist, anti-Semitic or pro-violence views. We don't want those people in this country.
Is this a heart versus head issue? Because if I judge my heart, yeah, I want this guy kicked out. I absolutely do. I don't want anybody in this country, or I certainly don't want somebody to be given British citizenship if they're anti-Semitic, if they slag off the British police, the British state. He called for Downing Street to be burnt down. I mean,